and welcome to the Computer Game Show. My name's David Turner, and I'm here with Sean Bell.
First, fucking yes.
Unbelievable. Just take it in your stride. You know what I mean? Have a little bit of pride. Just
it's not cool if you react like that, is it?
No, it's not. Yes, I'm first. I'm also here with Matt Murray.
Hello.
And James Farley's out again this week. He sort of dropped that out of nowhere, didn't he?
He mentioned it, I assumed he'd already told you.
No. Do you know what was really funny? It was that he crowbarred it into a sentence. It was like we were chatting about something. He went, yes, it is a shame that I will not be able to talk about this on the podcast this week because I am going on holiday. Yeah. And we were like, sorry, what? Where's that come from?
Yeah, I was like, did I miss this? Or is this?
Told you. No, you didn't, James. So now we're back down to a three-man show. I mean, surely say at the end of last week. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just mention it. I sort of hinted this before we hit record, but I'll tell you now because there's no other place that I can say it. My dad freaked me the fuck out yesterday. We went to my brother's place and for his birthday. We were just chatting and, you know, we talk about the T-shirts and we talk about gaming and stuff. Turns out my dad is into esports.
Oh, shit.
What? Genuinely been watching ninja? Esports. The FIFA World Cup. He said, did you watch the FIFA World Cup, Dave? I went, yeah. Obviously, like every game. He went, no, like the, you know, FIFA, the game. I was like, no, Dad, I didn't even know it was on. Oh, yeah, I watched a couple of games. Yeah, it was pretty good. I was watching a couple of guys play. And he was telling me, I said, Dad, you're into esports. And he just looked at me. He'd never heard that phrase before in his life. But yeah, apparently it's not very good to watch because they're too good at the game. They just pass it around and then they score and it gets a bit boring. I prefer it, you know. What, when they're worse, Dad? I don't understand. But there we go.
There was a bit of controversy in that because in the semi-final, it just crashed. The game crashed near like 20 in-game minutes from the end of the match. It was like a crucial semi-final. It just crashed. And like the players looked
pissed
off. What was the score? I don't know what the rematch was like, whatever. But there's a video of it crashing and the players, like one of them chucking their pad down, the other one looking clearly pissed off.
Oh, God.
Because what do you do? I guess we'll start the match again. Like,
see, that's the best side of esports, when people just lose it. Like, there's videos of people playing Smash Brothers that just rip their pad out of the console and walk off before the end of the match. I think that's brilliant. Like, to see that live, you see it all the time when you're playing online. Like, just such and such has left the match. Oh, for fuck's sake. But actually to see it on stage in front of people makes it all the more better, I think. I can't wait until the equivalent of Own Goals and Gaffs comes out for esports. Like DVD, get Danny Baker on there. I'd buy it. Would you buy it, Matt?
Definitely. If him commentating about Rocket League, Own Goals and Gaffs, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll be up for that. Right, okay. Should we get on to feedback from last week's
show?
Yeah, I guess
before
love it, did they?
That, obviously, hopefully by the time you listen to this, every T-shirt should have been delivered. Dave did an amazing bit of work to get every single t-shirt out. I think we actually delivered a majority of them before we'd even said we were on the Kickstarter, which I think is a Kickstarter world first.
7 hours of postage and packaging. That was I didn't quite anticipate it would be that much work, if I'm totally honest. I didn't quite think it through. At one point, before, like, we got all the boxes and everything, I thought, wow, that's a lot of t-shirts or whatever. And then at one point I was thinking, oh, I might write a little message, just, you know, a little thank you on a slip of paper and pop it in there as well. And I am so glad I decided against that.
Right, in every single one?
Yeah, because when it got to actually posting it out and stuff, I was like, oh my God, this is taking forever. It's taking forever. And it was just like little things. I mean, I was freaking out about putting the wrong like t-shirts and not as much as Matt. I mean, I was constantly getting text messages from Matt, but I was freaking out about putting the wrong things in what wrong packages or sending. There was the whole issue with the labels. We bought, what was it, £230 worth of labels? And as I was generating them, it said, okay, post by tomorrow. And I was like, what? How is that even possible? So we had to ring up, get them refunded, and then get some new ones. Like, it was just nuts. Like, the whole process was, I never want to see a t-shirt again, basically. So enjoy the ones you got, because that's all you're getting. That's it.
Yeah,
we're
done. It has been amazing to see everyone's pictures. It sort of felt real for the first time. Obviously, before, we've like been thinking about it for ages and working on it and like seeing spreadsheets and all sorts of stuff. But then actually to see people with their actual t-shirts was, yeah, it was amazing to see.
Yeah, when those photos started coming in, man, that was was dead cool. I liked it. Okay, yeah. Now can we do feedback?
Yeah. Well, actually, before that, we're obviously doing a live show at EGX this year, and we're going to have a meetup afterwards. So we're performing on the 22nd of September, which is a Saturday. We're doing 5 to 7 at EGX, and we're going to have a meet or drinks or whatever you want to do, whatever you want to call it, at a place or pub in. It's not at the NEC. It's actually in Middlesbrough. My God, it's not in Middlesbrough. It's in Birmingham. Just want to clarify that.
Where do you get Middlesbrough from?
Well, I went to uni there. I don't know. Just on my head.
Oh, right. No, that makes total sense now. You went to uni there, yeah. Sean.
The meet is definitely not in Middlesbrough. It's definitely in Birmingham. But we're meeting at the Wellington Ale Pub. Just Google it. There's also going to be a tweet this week, which will clarify more information, but yeah, so there'll be more information over the coming weeks, but we're basically going to have it in I want to say Middlesbrough again, the centre of Birmingham.
Just say Middlesbrough, see what happens. So you go to Middlesbrough. Oh, it's a bit weird. We had to go to Birmingham for the show, and then the meet was in Middlesbrough.
It's in Middlesbrough.
Yeah. If you want to find
out
where
the pub
is.
Before we go, don't look the pub up. Just don't look at photos. Just go to the venue.
Is it that bad?
Go to the venue and there'll be a tweet about it this week with, like, you know, where to go and what this and the other. But yeah, we're going to have the meet there. So it'll be awesome to meet. We'll probably meet it from like 7:30 until whenever it ends. I don't know. But yeah, I'm sure a bunch of us who are getting a train down together. So who knows? Maybe we'll see you there after the show.
We're getting the limo, surely. Bundle in the limo. Limousine.
Yeah.
Can we do feedback?
Yeah, we can do feedback.
Good.
I mean,
it's
not my me. It's everyone's me. Don't act like it's just something I'm just piping up with. We could do nothing. But
where's that come from? Where's that nothing
outburst
come
like,
from?
Talking like it's just something I'm doing on my own.
I want to talk about his special party again.
You did say, anyone got a problem with the venue? And I went, well, I weren't too sure. And you went, okay, well, don't worry about it. We're going to that venue. And I was like, oh, okay.
That was the conversation.
Really, so I mean, clearly you do.
Can we do feedback? Things, but I thought I would to make it easier for everyone.
Okay, can we do feedback now?
Yeah. So we posted a picture of all the four of us wearing the t-shirts and polo shirts on the morning of most of these things getting delivered. And
we did.
In the background of my picture, there was a bit of an Easter egg, and that Easter egg was a signed picture of David Turner's on my shelf.
Unbelievable. I took my photo. Like, it took me 4 attempts at making that photo, and I sent them all over. And Matt, God knows how many you took. I can't even imagine. I mean, putting Easter eggs in it, for Christ's sake. Was that intentional?
No, it's just there anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just there anyway.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, it's just there anyway. Cool. I'll tell you, but it would have been amazing if I had, but I didn't. It's just there. anyway, so basically Mario83 tweeted saying, we need to know more about the signed picture. Oodle saying, if a patron ever does happen, please make this photo a stretch. Please make a signed photo a stretch goal. And when is the Kickstarter for copies of Matt's signed photo of Dave? But this isn't the only copy, is it, Dave?
We've spoken about this before on the show. I'm sure we have.
Yeah, we definitely have.
I can't remember how you ended up with one.
No.
I think I do, actually. I think someone won a game, and as a joke, I was going to send them a signed photo.
You sent, I think it's Kurt Lewin, you signed his copy of Beyond Two Souls, and you sent that with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I showed you the photo, and you went, can I have one?
Yeah.
So I said, well, we printed out two, so yeah, you can have the other one. So I sent it to you. That's how you ended up with it. That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't expect you to frame it and put it in your front room.
It is funny, because when people say, who's that? And I'll say, it's David. And then we'll move on.
But for people that have only known me in the past couple of years, they'll go, David who? Like, see, I just look totally different in it.
You do.
Maybe I need to update it.
It's a good photo. I mean, what's the wording on it? It's like, many thanks or all the best. All the best.
Yeah, something like that. All the best.
All the best. David anyway, regarding the pictures, Dave Hughes. David looked like he took his picture in a VIP area of a home county's nightclub.
It was my mum and dad's front room. Oh, sorry, that was my bedroom. That was my bedroom in front of the curtains. That's
Sort of nightclub stuff. It's obviously because it's dark and you had the glasses on and stuff, but yeah, nice work.
I look fucking good in that photo.
You do. Radio 1, at Radio 1 the comic on Twitter. Nice shirts, lads. Now, would it be inappropriate to ask Matt where he got his wallpaper? I think we got it from Next, but a couple of years ago, so that's that. Done.
Heavy rotation at Next, I'm afraid, is well out of fashion now.
Shimmy Hill tweeted, a bit of a weird comment, but I'll read it. JCA Farley, or James Farley, is like an actual adult. The other's not so much.
What did that mean?
Yeah, what?
What did that mean? Is that just like a nice way of saying, fucking hell, James looks old? is that just a nice way of saying that?
Possibly. SNW Ustivu, he tweeted with a picture of basically just a t-shirt and him wearing his pants. That then started Oodles Crim doing the same thing. I thought we're going to have a Rush Appeal doing the same thing, but thankfully it was just those two. Thomas at Llama Fluff 42, here already. Thank you, Postman David Turners and admin guy Matt Murray. So that's.
You took that seriously, admin right? Guy. You got upset with that.
Now we've all successfully received our t-shirts and polo shirts. Can we please have that behind the curtain talk on the next pod about how Matt bungled and rescued the admin? That would be entertaining. It wouldn't be entertaining.
There are a bunch of stories that we're probably not going to tell on the podcast, but there are a bunch of stories that will come out eventually about this whole period of our lives. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've loved it. Like, seeing the amount of orders come in, seeing all the photos. Like, I love the t-shirt as well. Actually, we should probably talk about that. I'll come to that in a minute. But I've loved every minute of it. But there has been another side to it where it's kind of like, oh my God, I'm so glad it's over. And I mean, not just being wound up by each other, like that's standard anyway, but the stress of it all as well. Like, you really don't want to get it wrong, do you?
Yeah,
like you really don't want to fuck this up. I was freaking out about everything, even driving down to the post office. I'm like, you know, freaking out about my car being parked outside with all these t-shirts in, like anyone would want to steal them. Like, it's nuts. But yeah, no, the thing we need to talk about, and this was interesting actually. We were Matt and I were talking via email, so I don't think it was in the WhatsApp group, about whether you would be in, like. Sean,
yeah.
You're out and about,
yeah.
And the computer game show listener comes up to you and says, oh, you're Sean Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be more embarrassed if you were wearing the TCGS t-shirt or polo?
Yeah, I think I would.
Really? Why? Cause,
I don't know. Cause that's
I don't
like,
understand.
It's like being in a band and just wearing your own shirt. Like, I don't, but I see what you mean, because obviously 99% of the time, no one's going to recognize you. No one's going to really... mind what's on the shirt. No one knows it's your show. That's not weird. But then, yeah, for a listener to see him be like, is he wearing his own fucking shirt?
But I kind of think, do you know what? Fuck it. Like, who care? Like, I mean, I don't care. Yeah. Well, this all come about when Matt and I were talking about whether we would wear these to EGX.
Yeah.
And my stance is, it might be a bit much for me to wear it on, like, when we're doing our live podcast.
Yeah.
But on the Friday, I might just wear the t-shirt because I don't.
I think,
if,
yeah, like
really
especially
cares.
In that situation, because if, like, in case people do want to come over and say hi, like, they might not be sure it's us, but if we're wearing the shirts.
Oh, come on, we'd be surrounded by people. Like, they'll know it's us.
Also, it's us. For EGX, I've got special ones with our names on the back. Like, we're footballers.
Our name and our gamer tags, yeah.
I over the weekend I wore the one with like the diagonal stripes. That's not an issue. I'm not sure I'd wear the one with the logo.
Matt's got his own special shirts, by the way, everyone.
Originally.
You know when I said these stories would leak out, then I didn't really expect it to come out this
but we
quickly.
Couldn't give everyone like 50 different designs, so I thought, fuck it, I'll get my own.
But you could have given us four a few more options.
Well, I didn't know there was
kids' shirts.
We could do it with all of them.
I was like, I'll have a t-shirt and a polo, please. Okay, right, I'm getting a t-shirt polo with a special Matt Murray gold lettering etched into the collar.
Yeah, you could have done whatever you want.
Did I?
Yeah.
It didn't seem to be an option at the time. But,
there was an option, boy.
I really like the t-shirt. I think I like them both, right? But I really like the t-shirt.
I was surprised,
I was like, whoa, this actually does look pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I was wearing something at EJX, it'd probably be that. But yeah, no, I mean, I understand why you would be embarrassed. Like, because Matt, you were saying that you'd be a bit embarrassed rocking about in your own t-shirt and polo as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I walked out in one, it was fine, because that doesn't say the computer game show on it. And so I can sort of get away with that. Well, I did think, man, what if I did bump into a listener and like, hey, Matt, it's, oh, you're wearing that shirt.
Why care? Why care anymore?
I wonder if it's like, is it partly... Is the embarrassment partly like, oh yeah, he'll only wear a shirt if he can fucking get it at cost? Like,
no, I think it's more like you're trying to. Like, I suppose the embarrassment comes from you care so much about your own podcast that you try and advertise it everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, hey man, I'm from the computer game show guy. It's that sort of feeling. But yeah. I think I'm gonna wear one of the shirts on the Friday anyway, because it's just like, fuck it, why not?
Yeah, I guess the rest of us can't wear one, because if we all wore them on the Friday, that would be a bit like, hey,
that's true.
Care less.
Oh, but then, because that is worse, because when if people saw like all four of us cutting about
in a
like
row.
Yeah.
Oh my god, no, we all do it. One of us has T on the front, one of us has C on the front, one of us has J. Hey, you guys.
Yeah, but then when we all split up, people come up to me and just, why have you got a big G on your shirt, Dave? Just
well, okay, let me tell you about
and the G.
You can have a T one, and Sean can have an S one.
Turner,
Sean.
When I went on my stag do, and we went on a canal boat for 5 days, and it was like, it's on like the third day, we got a lot of people we were passing were like, oh, is it stag, is it? And we were like, yeah. And we're like, why is everyone asking us that today? And then I realised it was just because half the people on the boat happened to have Midnight Resistance shirts, and we happened to be wearing them on the same day. So people were probably like, oh yeah, they're all wearing the same shirts, it must be a stag. So, no.
Your stag suit sounds worse every anecdote that comes out of it. Right, let's move on. Should we go? What was the next feedback?
Yeah, so
Matt?
Greg Shepherd emailed in about my Abzu, which
we'll
talk about last week.
Off that fucking boat.
What was that?
Nothing, gone.
Yeah, so Greg Shepherd emailed because I talked about Abzu last week. I think Matt seems to have fundamentally misjudged Abzu by thinking it's just a wannabe journey instead of taking it at face value. He didn't so much review Abzu as inform us that it's not Journey, and in doing so missed out on the actual brilliance of the game. It's not a story game. It's not trying to pull on those heartstrings. It's an experience where you just go along for the ride and take in the amazing audio and visual experience in front of you. Any game elements that are there mostly seem to be put there to bring cool looking ocean stuff in front of you. And so in those terms, it pisses all over Journey because it's so absurdly gorgeous and the music is so good. I found it a near constant delight and one of the best done in one sitting games I've ever played. I mean, Greg, I definitely mentioned multiple times how good it looks, how good it sounds.
Yeah.
And I guess I compare Journey because it's the closest comparison. It's like
the same game.
Yeah, that's a good bit of context. Yeah, I mean, it does flow in many. It's similar scenes, certainly, and it seems to flow in many and quite the same way. But yeah,
I feel like I've got off lightly because I agreed with pretty much everything you said, and he's only mentioned you, so that's nice.
Yeah,
but it's different opinions, isn't it? I mean, we've obviously voiced his side of it, and there's clearly something there for some people to like. But I mean, Matt can only say what he thinks of the game. Like, I don't think he did it. I don't think he was unfair last week. If he was unfair towards it, then maybe he deserves a bit of a tongue lashing. But I thought he was relatively fair with it. He was just disappointed with how similar it was to Journey without evoking the same sort of feelings. That's what I heard.
It definitely, absolutely is an amazing audio and visual experience without a shadow of a doubt. It just didn't quite live up to what I maybe had hoped or expected, but still a very good game. Lars Hedidam. Sorry if I butchered your name.
Lars Hedidam sounds
Lars
about right.
Hedidam, he came to the show. I came to the show after the sad exit of Midnight Resistance, RIP.
Hey.
And so far, it has been fun to follow the changes over time. From Psycho Killer David before the tone down.
Yep.
Matt's struggle with Dark Souls, which is actually off his plate. Dr. Farley's constant lack of will to live and his self torment in David Cage's universe. And Sean. Sup, Sean? Sup. Being in three countries.
Was that it? That's all he said about Sean?
Yeah.
Sup, Sean? That's all he said.
So what does he mean it like, as in like, what is up, like what is wrong with you? Or just like,
no, as in like, hey, Sean,
Okay. That's weird.
I don't know if that's a diss or not.
I think you need more drama, Sean. I think that's maybe what he's implying.
Yeah,
so. Just start saying
David
stupid
Turner,
stuff like
how
I do.
He does this and he does that. Matt Murray and all this and all that. James. Oh, well, what? James. Crazy James. And Sean is also on the podcast. Yeah. Go on.
Being in three countries, rotating constantly, the show is a welcome treat once a week, even when you were visited by that hybrid cross between a household fern and a slough on ketamine, that is Mr. Capone Adam. Here's some feedback. I fully back the concept of Farley breakdancing, and I think if I speak for everybody when I say that James is backing out of his obligation to do so will hurt both the children and general global development. James, be the hero we need. Can we establish a GoFundMe, perhaps, that donates to charity or actual development, and thereby bullying James into doing it? I will personally donate a velour tracksuit, here's a picture, personalised for James to perform in. Let's make this happen.
Okay.
I think it's happening.
I mean, he's doing that sort of, what they call, modest thing of like, no, guys, I can't break dance. I can't. And then he's going to come out full chains, vest, shell suit. Do they wear hats?
Who's they?
They do, to spin
on
their head,
who's the they in that
right?
sentence, David?
What's that?
Who's the they in that sentence?
The break dancers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they wear those. Sean. I think they wear those Kango hats, don't they?
Yeah, that's true. We'll get one of them. With a TCGS logo all over it. I'm sure Matt can swing it with his custom design.
I've actually got a few here in the house.
Let's just. I mean, when he comes out, you're all going to be pleasantly surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's got skills. Harrison Hunt emailed in. Goldeneye chat was spectacular. Can Dave please give some more details? Also, considering that DeRare also owns Donkey Kong Country, what would that be like?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought of what a fake Donkey Kong Country would be like. Because it's weird, because it's a Nintendo character, isn't it? But a Rare game, so it kind of fucks everything up.
They don't still own it, surely, because there's been Donkey Kong Country games since.
Of course, there's Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, but they must own the original game. That, I mean, their logo's all over it.
I don't know how these things work.
Rip Rare out of the, like, just, they didn't make it, actually. How do you deal with that?
Well, no, because Nintendo can just buy the rights off them, can't they, if there were any that needed. Like, it could have been in the original contract, like, yeah, look, you can put this game out, but you don't actually own shit.
Yeah, but then surely they can block it by saying, you're not allowed our logo all over a Nintendo game.
I've not seen the contracts, have I? If you give me time to look over the contracts, Dave,
okay,
and I'll
let you. Get in touch
with the episode.
I'll put my contract law hat on, the one you saw like the other week with the David Cage stuff. I think we did very well with that.
Go on to twitter.com/lawyerfornintendo and I'm sure his views will very much be those of the company.
Ricky Cartwright, I've listened to your podcast for years and I always really enjoy the content. One of my favourite features in the old Joypod episodes were the spoiler discussions about games. I'm thinking specifically about the Walking Dead and Heavy Rain discussions. Have you ever considered doing something similar for the computer game show? Taking a game that's been out for a few months or years, such as, say, Detroit Become Human, A Way Out, or Far Cry 5, and having a full-on spoiler chat about the story and the mechanics. This could be positioned after the end credits of the show or in separate mini episodes. A lot of podcasts do this for films and don't really get the same sort of content for games, and I generally find that once I've completed a game, I really want to hear what other people might think of it. I think there's a lot of games that could benefit from this sort of discussion, not just story and decision-based games, but also games and mechanics that you try not to spoil in the review discussion, such as Titanfall 2.
So I thought about this a lot, actually. I mean, we love them, and we were going to do them. Do you remember? Like, at one point, the big one was Inside. We all wanted to do a spoiler section at the end of the podcast about Inside.
And then I fucked that by taking another year to finish it.
Sean went, I'll finish it next week, which turned to, I've finished it next year. It was just ridiculous. But I'm thinking, you know, Life is Strange is coming out, and people... There's a certain group of people that complain about how much we talk about Life is Strange. So what if we did separate spoiler
episodes? By a certain group of people, do you mean John Denton?
John Denton is one of them. He's king of the people that do not like us talking about Life is Strange. No, I mean, it's clear that, you know, some people get wound up by it. So I think the sort of happy medium is that we do a spoiler chat for every episode of Life is Strange Season 2.
That'd be cool.
I'll be up for that. That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Completely separate. We'll release it, say, on the Friday rather than the Wednesday, sort of like eke it out a bit. And then we put together, you know, a short half an hour to 45 minutes of us talking about that episode like we used to do on the spoiler stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think he's right. I loved those episodes. It was great. Heavy Rain one was like a proper highlight. Then the Walking Dead ones we did, Jesus Christ, with Matt, like Matt and James's wild decisions that he made throughout the whole thing. Like James, I love James when it comes to these moral choice games, he's got it so in his head that he's making the correct moral choice, but then says it, and then everyone else in the room goes, "You did what?" and then he really tries to defend his decision, and it sort of falls apart towards the end. It's brilliant. So I can't wait to see what he does. Later,
but I'd love to do them because I do always enjoy the spoiler chat for real. So, yeah, well up for that.
Yeah,
last week James talked about Paul Panic, he slagged off the music. Angus, who did all the art and animation for Paul Panic, tweeted us, thanks for talking about Paul Panic, but you're wrong about the music in caps.
Yeah, smiley face, laughing smiley face.
Yeah,
I mean, Angus, don't worry about it, mate. You weren't slagging up, don't push it. Right, he weren't slagging off your work. If you worked on the animation, mate, and we all said that it looked brilliant, then just sit back and just, you know, otherwise we'll turn the cannon slightly and fire.
Actually,
I've been thinking about that animation, man. I'll be honest, I think it looks like total shit. No, it doesn't. It looks great, but yeah. Not only that, James and music, he's got strange opinions about music.
What music does James
listen to?
Like?
The Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack constantly. Really? Okay. Sure. next bit of feedback.
Joshua Garrity at Combine Hunter on Twitter. Does James have some sort of malfunctioning babblefish that translates every reasonable and measured opinion David has into the worst kind of hysterical negativity? David literally just explained why Yakuza 0 wasn't for him, and that's it. You're being unfair, James. And obviously James
gets way too emotional about certain games. And if we, I mean, we had a chat in the WhatsApp group this week about Shenmue and me streaming it in the near future. And it got serious. It got very, very serious. And I'm going, James, what I said, there's no, like, it doesn't change anything about the game. You still love the game. That's all fine. Why do you give a shit about what I say? You constantly call me an idiot and I don't know what I'm talking about. Just ignore me. But he can't because he knows that I'm right. That's the problem. He knows that I'm so right about computer games that he, you know, it's clear that his opinion is wrong and it does him in. That was funny last week, though, when if I made the slightest exaggeration about the game, he would go nuts. But then he openly stated that I shouted, "It's the worst game of all time." Like, it's just... Yeah, James Farley, you've got to love him.
You've got to love him. Junkyard Gary Disco at Gary Duton on Twitter. So glad James is jumping on a DLC for Last of Us. I think it's absolutely perfect and better than the main game. I don't think
Gary's mentioned that before, has he?
Never.
That's the first time I've heard that he loves the
Some of the ideas
DLC
on DLC were recycled and used in Uncharted 4, which makes me extra hype for The Last of Us 2, because they can have only improved since then. I mean, once again, James isn't here, but we'll pass it on. Last week, I mentioned, maybe stupidly, about the fact that my 1440p monitor I use in the office and have my Xbox plugged into sometimes is 2K. Tom James disagreed, and perhaps correctly so. Follow up. Actually, Matt, 2K resolution is the cinema standard of 2048 by 1080, much closer to 1080p than 1440p. Now, James, Tom James. I mean, I call you James because we're, you know, it's James, you know, it's just Tom. I've got some research, and actually, basically, that isn't 2K.
Oh, God, I've just read it. Go on.
I'm not going to go through all this. But basically, 1080p, actually, I'm not even going to bother. Yeah, you're right, James. It was boring. We'll move on. Louis Belfort, thanks for making the effort mentioning the games at the end and in annotations.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for skipping that. I appreciate
it. Often listening to hands free, this really helps. I mean, yeah, so this is a discussion from a few weeks ago. Every game that's mentioned on the show now is in the show notes. We're not going to mention it in the conversation unless it naturally comes in, but it's in the show notes.
I'm going to crowbar it in as much as possible. Right.
Cool. That's it. If you want to leave any feedback, it's at ComputerGamePod on Twitter, or you can email thecomputergameshow@gmail.com.
Let's do the news. I'll do it. Shall I do it?
Yeah, if you want. Good. James hasn't given us a recording, so...
Things have happened, yeah. IGN Nintendo Editor copies Dead Cells review. Now, I'm assuming most of you have heard this, because my word, it's been all over the internet since. I mean, when did this break?
I think this must have been, it basically broke, I believe, after Weird Podcast. And I think the Tuesday, so the day after Weird Podcasted. So by the time the show came out, it's already kicking off, really.
So yeah, it's all about now. How do you pronounce the guy's name? Philip?
Is it Mucin?
Mucin. Yeah, Philip Mucin. Yeah.
So he was a YouTuber, and he got hired by IGN. So it's IGN staff, and he put out IGN's video review of Dead Cells. Didn't he also do the written review?
Yeah,
I believe he did the written review.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a smaller YouTuber, he was getting like, I think it was about 1,000 views a show. What was his name again?
Boomstick Gaming. Yeah.
Yeah, Boomstick Gaming. So he put out a comparison video from his video to Philip's, to IGN's, played them side by side. Now, I saw this claim, and the tweet was very strange. The tweet was very, very strange. It was like, I think I'm being plagiarized, but I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, well, the actual name of the video was everywhere. IGN copied my Dead Cells review. What do I do?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it was a strange one. And I just thought, is this going to be some sort of shitty claim where it's like, look how similar it is. It's not similar at all. Yeah. And the video fucking started out like it. I was watching it just going, oh, come on, man. You don't own fast and fluid gameplay. Like, that is not a phrase that you own. You know, other people will use. And then as I was thinking this in my head, I'm going, oh, no. Well, no, that is pretty close, actually. You might have a... Okay, right, call the police. Like, it was like, it got worse and worse the more that the video went on. Anyway, we see this unfold, and it went on and on over the next couple of days, and Philip was let go by IGN. And one of the things before we get to his response was, I genuinely felt for IGN a bit. I don't know about you guys, but... there's a few reasons for this. The first being, it's really easy to jump on a huge site like that, especially when it comes to gaming. We know that there's this sort of reactionary, acidic community that sort of bubbles around this stuff on Reddit. So you knew that the response was always going to be way over the top. Now, don't get me wrong, the response needed to be harsh because it was fucking outrageous, right? The guy was literally ripping off a sort of a small YouTube channel. I don't think that's in any doubt, right? When you look at the evidence, I don't think that is in any doubt here. But what I felt sorry for was that IGN reacted very quickly, very smartly, and very professionally. Mm. You know, they just went out and they said, we're parting companies with this person. We do not believe this is right. We've taken the video down. I believe they've reached out to Boomstick Gaming to discuss possible compensation for the amount of ad revenue they've made out of that video, which was essentially based on his. I think they've gone about their business very well. Mm. The problem is they are now going to be... They've now been touched with this. I don't think there was any way they could have checked for this. I mean, checking for plagiarism is hard anyway. You change a few words and then Google's out of the question because it won't throw up a match.
Yeah.
You'd have to go through every single Dead Cells video review and compare it like for like with every single video review that one of your writers puts out there. And that's an impossible task. But they will always be tarnished with this unfairly because, you know, they didn't know, like, they wouldn't have put it up. They're not idiots. They're IGN for a reason. They're a professional outlet. They wouldn't have put it up had they known that this was going on. Mm. And you go onto reviews on their websites now and your videos and you look at the comments and they're all saying things like, well, you just copied this one, you know, and that's going to follow them around. And not everyone would have heard this story. You know, if you're new to IGN, if you're, you know, not as hardcore gamers that you're reading all the news all the time, you see all this stuff. All these comments down there and you're thinking, what the fuck is this all about? And then maybe you look up the story and say, oh, IGN news editor, Nintendo editor copied reviews from other websites and stuff. And you just think, that's a big blemish on them. Whether they, you know, deserved it or not, they absolutely did not deserve it.
The thing is that they haven't had a great reputation anyway, so this all plays into the false narrative appeal. So, you know, they're bought by publishers, etc., etc. And
see, I don't know any of that stuff. Like, I don't really read IGN that much. You know, I watch occasional videos and stuff like that, but I don't know the history of the, you know, the viewed, like how people view that website, really, genuinely, because I, you know, I'm not part of the Reddit community. I've never got into Reddit. I've never really followed the sort of drama around these big sites. I'll just read the occasional article or watch the occasional video. But this was just thrust everywhere. This story spiraled out of control the moment that first video was posted. And it was pretty nuts. It was pretty everywhere. And they've got, like, my first reaction was, oh man, you've got to feel for the people that are working there. Because they didn't want this.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly didn't want this. It's really hard to pick up on. And they've dealt with it the best way they can. But that's not going to stop those people just banging on about it.
Or has ever been there, really. It's not just people working there now. It's just, if you work for IGN, it's like it feels like a tarnished brand unfairly because of one person. It's really unfair.
I mean, I think,
like,
the people who are still commenting saying, oh yeah, but was this stolen as well? I mean, they're probably people who never read IGN anyway.
No, and they're people that are just doing it to be dickheads.
Yeah,
right?
That's a certain corner of the internet that's just reactivated itself. Well, not that it was ever completely dormant, but I won't use the hashtags. I know it makes James anxious, but yeah, certain people who think there's fucking conspiracies left, right and centre in games press. When IGN tweeted that the guy had been fired, everyone was like, yeah, but what else do we not know about? What have we just not found out that you've copied? And it's like, oh yes, yeah, so that's right, because these people are just never happy. It's never enough. Like, they can't just go like oh yeah, I'm campaigning for a more ethical games press, and here's a good example of a press outlet finding out that something's wrong and dealing with it. Good job, guys. It's like, no, what else is there? Like, it's just fucking does me in.
And again, it's like in the same way, not to defend what Philip did himself, but as he said in his video, and we'll get to that, his apology video, you know, sending death threats and stuff is not a right reaction to this either.
Oh, God,
you know
what I
mean? And this, I mean, we could say this is all obvious bollocks. This is all horseshit, and everyone's saying it.
It's wank,
you know,
isn't
I mean?
It? The amount like of times, like, how many times we've discussed something and we've had to caveat it with, but also, don't threaten to kill people.
Yeah, I know. I know, it's bollocks, isn't it? We should stop doing that, really, because it's just horseshit. Like, of course you fucking shouldn't. Yeah. We're not talking to idiots either. Like, our listeners know this shit. Like, they're not. They're clear. But I mean, I've not seen anyone be a total, complete knobhead like that from our sort of listenership. Yeah. So we're not talking to fucking idiots here. But it's just like that. You know, there are dickheads on the internet. That should be the end of it, right? Yeah. Okay. The problem is that when they seep into, you know, people reading that website and seeing these, like, it's just going to be tarnished with them for a long time. And I hope that they're able to shake that pretty quickly, because it really ain't their fault. So what was it? It was Friday. Philip Musin. We really should learn how to pronounce that name.
It's definitely Musin. I heard someone else say it today.
Philip Musin.
Yeah, but before that, even, like, Jason Schreier at Kotaku had already done some work and some research, and he found that, I think, the FIFA 18 review on Switch that had some sentences and some paragraphs in it, which also seemed quite similar from a Nintendo Life review. And then since
I've got to be honest, Matt, I searched his name plus Future Unfolding just to see if he reviewed it. He didn't. So
he did not do that. So he did that, yeah. And then, so that was the FIFA 18 for Nintendo Life. And then I think there's another one that someone else has found, but yeah. Oh, yeah, so the review of Metroid Samus Returns from Engadget, and five days later when Philip posted his, there were also other sentences and stuff which are similar. I mean, it's tough because you may think, well, there aren't many ways to describe a game and the mechanics, and I can see how similarities can definitely creep up, but then so many sentence structures are almost identical. It's not just a common narrative, it's not just a common sort of language amongst game critics and game reviewers. I feel like this feels like it's something a bit more, which is sad to see.
I mean, yeah, because Because what's interesting about it is that it's not that he's getting away with not writing a review, it's that he's getting away with not playing the fucking game. That's what's happening here. Like,
well, it might not be that, though. He may have played the game before and read his reviews, and it's like, in his head, thinks, oh, that's a good sentence, but actually, he's just read
it. But
in
terms of, but if he's played the game, like, the effort it takes to go through and reword a review like that is not, it's yeah, not much less than writing there, it yourself.
There were reports that he was playing it in the office.
Yeah.
I think he played it, and I think he probably finished it and probably loved it. I mean, he gave it like a 9.7, so it's like a, it's a super high review. So those people clearly looked at it, and that's all, I think. I'm just like, if it was, people if, caught on.
If saving time was his goal, which surely it must have been, like, why else would you do this? Like, unless you literally cannot fucking write. To me,
that's my theory.
Okay.
My theory is that he was worried about how bad his his own work was, that he used someone else's to, you know, seem more insightful. Or
he drives his brains in the apology video, Dave. So do you want to go into?
No, he doesn't.
Well, he tries.
Let's go to the apology video. Now, listen, Philip, if you're listening, mate, right, you need to go back a few episodes and listen to how to apologise, because people hated me. They hated me for a week. I got so much abuse. Now they're eating out my hands. I did one little apology and they're all like, yeah, Dave, you are the best, actually. Well done. So I know how to apologise in these situations. You can learn from the master. His apology was fucking awful. It was awful. I mean, did you watch the whole thing?
I mean, he didn't actually apologise to the guy who's abused, though, right? He sort of
said that this isn't... He said, what is it? I didn't intentionally plagiarise.
Yeah, yeah.
With that being said, I'm sorry to IGN. Like, what? I don't know what you mean, mate. Like,
said that there was, in inverted commas, a lot of circumstances regarding the review. I don't understand what that means.
But then didn't
either.
Go into them. He didn't explain himself. He opens the video by saying, I'm sure you want to hear my side of the story. Yes, we do. We got to the end of the video, didn't hear your side of the story.
Still waiting.
We had a load of bollocks about how, you know, it was just really bizarre. There's a great video out there. If you search, I think it's YouTuber's Apology, I think is the title. And it's someone explaining how YouTubers apologize. And he opens up the video by going, okay, here we go. And he does that and then starts laughing, right? And says, and then goes into the various different ways they try and add this emotion, trying to show that they care about their apology when everything is actually scripted down to the T and it's not as sincere as it should be, or at the very least doesn't come across anywhere near as sincere, because it's just a script that they've taken from another, you know, YouTube apology video. Like, it's not real. This followed that to the T, you know, from the sighing to the not cutting out at the end of the video after, like, until he gets up and walks towards the camera, you know, it's all bits like that. Yeah. The weird thing was that he doesn't talk about the, like, if he was to sit down and say, yeah, I did it. Here's why I did it. I don't rate myself well enough. My goal now is to improve every aspect of my reviewing, which I'll be doing on my own channel, whatever, and proving, like, trying to gain your trust back. I will spend the rest of my career trying to change, to gain your trust back. That sort of thing, to acknowledge what you've done and say what you're going to do to not correct it, because you can't correct it, but to at least improve yourself. That's what people want to see. Like, if you're not going to go completely silent, which I would fully understand you want to do as well. Instead, he sort of admits it, then discredits it, then attacks Kotaku, and then has a go at everyone for having a go at him.
Yep.
And then it's the end. And I was like, what is this? What is it?
It was
very, very strange.
If he'd said, like, look, I got code, and I was told I had 12 hours to bang a review out. Or, you know, that's not an excuse, but it's fucking something. Do you know what I mean? But that, yeah, the sort of the vague, like, oh, well, you know, there are circumstances around it, and also it wasn't intentional. Bollocks! It's just, there's no substance there at all.
One of the things I found about it, and I guess this is maybe, it's not a special case. Maybe it's a special case, and I'm not, it's not, that's not a reason.
Special case?
Well, no, a special case, maybe because this was came out for months on PC and, like, early access stuff, and then, like, the 1.0 version came out. So he obviously had a lot of time to read about it. And I think he said in a video, which has actually since been deleted by him, because there's so many people kicked off, but I think he said, yeah, I spent, you know, a long time reading everything I could about it, learning, you know, reading and watching all the stuff. So I thought that was a bit of a strange process. I mean, I'm not a reviewer, so I don't know, but that felt like a strange thing to read everything you can, educate yourself about the game and not everyone's opinions, then try and formulate your own, because that's always going to be
That's what you do. You educate yourself about the game by playing it. And, you know, when it comes to the facts, like, there's usually a handy review guide that you receive with code. And to be fair, those review guides are just like, here are the facts. And that's so helpful. Mm. Because when you're reviewing, say, a multiplayer game, you know, like, you play through all the maps, but you ain't counting them. So just having a little guide that says there are 12 maps in this game mode, you're like, okay, great. Now I know that there are 12 out, and maybe I can feed that information into it. Yeah. Go and reading other people's stuff is weird anyway, because what if they put something and you go, oh, that's a good point. That completely changes your experience or changes your perception of your experience just based on reading that shit. It's a strange way to do things for me personally. I mean, I would avoid doing that, but I don't work. I've never been a writer. I don't work in the industry, so I don't know how other people do that stuff. There's a difference between reading someone's, like, if someone's to come up to me and say, I'm a professional games reviewer, I find it really handy to read other people's work to sort of see if my opinions bounce off or whatever, and then I can reflect on that, right? I would totally understand that. They ain't taking chunks and just rewording it. There's a step there, isn't there?
Because there's if you hate a game and then you're like, let's just see what everyone else is saying, and everyone else loves it, then that's like, that's not colouring your opinion, that's just making you go, right, hang on, right, I might be missing something here. But that, yeah, and I say that, but there's a world apart from, like, between that and actually just like, oh, well, I'll just copy what they said, because I don't get it, so I'll just copy and paste.
I mean, we can all agree that it's crazy, and especially when it's your career.
Yeah.
Like, that is,
it's sad.
I mean, you work for one of the biggest websites in gaming. How would you think you'd get, whatever, it's crazy.
Well, this is it, like,
I think
it's like,
even
obviously,
more crazy is that apology.
What's really scummy is that, obviously, he's not going to steal a review from GameSpot, or, you know, like, but he's obviously seen this review and been like, oh, no fucker's going to watch this. So I could. This is fair game. Like, no one will notice. Like, it's
not thinking that the guy that wrote it probably checks out IGN.
Yeah, IGN's quite big. Like, yeah.
He didn't think about it the other way, did he?
Yeah, exactly. No. So,
yeah,
I think IGN dealt with it as well as they could. I don't think that means that they're in the clear from the dickheads. But then,
well, they never
when
were.
Are they ever in the clear from dickheads?
I think, yeah, because of the sheer size of them, I think they're always going to be a target from a certain corner of the internet. But I think the other thing we've not really touched on is, so he mentions Jason Schreier by name from Kotaku and says, oh yeah, and he also tried to accuse me of plagiarizing another review for clicks. And it's like, no, he just did some work, mate. Just did some research and was like, oh, by the way, we've had a look and we've turned this up as well. Like, he's not making it up. And Jason Trier has since found
Chris
other
Scullion's
stuff, right?
Scullion's review as well,
it was,
wasn't
yeah, Chris Scullion review from, was it Nintendo Life? Yeah.
Yeah. He was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and yeah, so Jason, so basically, yeah, and he said like, oh yeah, Jason, if you want to carry on looking, feel free. And he has, and he's found more stuff. So, God, what a fucking
it's
embarrassment.
Bad. Look, I mean, I've seen people saying this a lot where I don't like kicking a man when he's down, and I totally agree. Like, it's been done now. He's lost his job. He's paid the price. You know, just digging into him is not a nice thing to do in my book, you know. But at the same time, he's just doing the most stupid shit. Yeah. Like, yeah, keep looking, mate. All right, we will. Here's loads more. Yeah.
And, like, to Boomstick Gaming's credit, like he said... he said, you know, I don't want anyone to lose their jobs over this. I've been unemployed. It's fucking shit. That's not what I want.
No, but he must have known that that's what they had to
do. Yeah, I mean, no choice. Like, there's no coming back from something like this. Like, if you are caught plagiarizing in, like, if you're at university studying for a degree, you're caught plagiarizing, that is fucking it. Like, everything, every like, you know, higher education qualification you ever get is now worthless. Like, they all get torn up. So, you know.
Fuck it.
Yep.
I think we've covered it. Right. Should we move on to the next story? This is a good one. Those bloody blokes at Rockstar, they've only gone and done it again, haven't they, eh? They've released
blokes. All blokes, the, Dave.
Blokes can be women. Right. This I'm not specific. Okay. It, those people at Rockstar, look, I love everyone. Everyone's cool.
Do you want to make an apology good. Now, Dave? Or do you want to do a video?
No. It wasn't intentional. You're all
wrong. There are circumstances around.
Red Dead Redemption 2 gameplay trailer come out last week. My word, did it blow my little socks off. I mean, I hadn't been totally blown away up until now with the sort of panning ones that they do before they release like proper trailers explaining what the game's actually about. I mean, it looked nice, but it, you know, it just looked like a better looking Red Dead game. And to some extent, you could say the same about this trailer, but I was really, really excited. I mean, firstly, the first thing that I picked up on while watching it was scale. And it's something we've spoken about a lot in recent years. So it's definitely from the 360 era. Scale seems to be something that games devs are really starting to sort of click with now and understand. And I don't know if you felt this as well, Sean, but the shots where they were in sort of a forest.
Yeah.
I'd never seen a forest like that before.
Yeah.
Like the height of the trees, and because when you're in a forest, you feel quite claustrophobic because there's so much stuff everywhere and you feel off the beaten path. Just that shot in that forest sort of just really hit home for me, where it was kind of like, whoa.
It was the variation because, like, obviously, yeah, sort of demands of modern game development. If you're putting a forest in your game, I don't know the exact process. Someone's probably going to shout at me. Basically, you build a landscape and then there's that speed tree thing, which as the name suggests, like, just helps you generate a lot of foliage. So there's not a lot of handcrafting in there, which is fine. You know, I totally get it, because I don't expect people to hand model entire forest full of fucking trees. However, yeah. As you say, in that shot, the sheer variation in the landscape and the shapes and types of the trees and stuff just looks insanely detailed and like it's been handcrafted.
God, yeah. And, you know, when you put a forest in a game, I'm sorry to bang on about the forest all day, but when you put a forest in a game, you put a fucking path in there, don't you?
Yeah.
But this, it just looked like the wilderness. Like, it was, yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense. You're on the frontier. It's like, yeah, then that's just a natural forest. No one's put a road through it.
Totally. Yeah, I was really, really digging it. Yeah, so I mean, there's that stuff. I like the idea from what I got from it. Now, I can't, you know, I'm not 100% sure that this is the case, but what it felt like was that you know, in open world games, you're like, if you want to buy stuff, this was really bad in Far Cry 5, right? It really didn't work in Far Cry 5. If you want to buy stuff, if you want to level up, if you want to do any of, you know, your usual game shit in a computer game, you travel to a town, and sometimes when you're like walking about or whatever, and it's just like, oh God, now I've got to go back here. And then even if it's fast traveling, there's usually a loading screen and it's pain in the ass. It looks like in this, you just take a town with you. Like, you just, wherever you want to stop, you just set up camp with your mates, and then you can do your mini games. You can do it's things like that that get me excited, where it's kind of like, nah, this ain't a normal open world game that we're used to. They're going to do new things like Rockstar do. Yeah. Like GTA 5, for example, I thought, you know, they did that whole free player thing and switching between free players, and I think that worked to some extent. I don't think it fully worked as much as in terms of the narrative as well as it could have. But the idea that you can flick and see what the other characters are doing at any time was exciting. Mm. And also the main thing that I was really impressed with in GTA 5 was how it took standard open world missions and then sort of like just went on a different path halfway through. So like, for example, there's one where you're chasing someone but you can't get too close, but then you know, if you get, you know, can't get too far away, and then your engine breaks down and you go off on a complete tangent within that mission, and you go, okay, right, this is good, it's taking a classic mission and just putting a spin on it, and now you're doing something completely different. I like that stuff. With this, the Rockstar constantly try new things like that, and they don't always work, but I, you know, if I've got that right and you're actually taking the town around with you, that is just brilliant, because it just saves so much bullshit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It reminds me of set up and, like, so when Red Dead Redemption came out, and, you know, everyone was like, ah, yeah, but, you know, like, I know you've got a horse, but surely, like, that it's going to seem like a bit restrictive compared to having a car in Grand Theft Auto. And it's like, no, because it's obviously it's a bit of a stretch, but in Red Dead, you whistle and your horse turns up. And that's sort of believable. Whereas around the time of GTA 4, there was no believable way of being like, oh yeah, you make a phone call and your car shows up. Like, so yeah, it was like, yeah, okay, so it's a lower tech setting, but here's a clever way to get around it and actually make it more convenient. And it's, yeah, it's like they've done that again. Like, you couldn't have a thing in GTA 5 where you set up a little town around you wherever you go. Whereas the idea of just being like, right, let's set up camp in a Western is believable. So yeah, smart.
And the other thing that I really liked is that I've always wanted this in these open world games, where you can go up to anyone and press a button to say a phrase to anyone to see how the reaction is. And they had a bit of this in GTA, but they didn't really go for it, where it was kind of like, press X and you will say something bad. Press B and you will say a compliment. Mm. And it was just like, it was arbitrary. It didn't seem to work every time and it was a bit of a mess. This, where you go up to anyone and a dialogue option comes up, just sounds like, it sounds perfect, because it's a new plaything in an open world game. Like, just to wander up to anyone and just go, hey, fuck you, and then see how that pans out. Or, you know, there was various different examples given in this game.
I feel like it's
stuff like that that get me excited.
I feel like I'm going to have way too much fun just travelling about on the horse, and then when I'm passing people, just being like, all right. Little tip of the hat.
Man. Yeah. I hope one of them is just man, where you can just... Man, every single person you walk past, man or woman, man. It's just nodding at everyone. And of course, it looks gorgeous. The story looks interesting. The gunplay looks vastly improved. I mean, we don't know how well this will actually translate to the final product, but for a first gameplay trailer, I was fucking impressed.
Well, apparently, so they mentioned this trailer was... it's the first trailer we've seen, which is PS4 Pro footage.
Did they say that?
Yeah. So everything...
Are you sure you're not just confusing it with my tweet?
Why? What was your tweet?
Did you not see my tweet in the week?
Yeah, with the noise in the background. Yeah.
Where I literally put a jet engine from a Boeing 747 on top of it.
Or maybe they didn't... Yeah, they definitely said all footage is from the PS4 Pro version.
Right.
Yeah, apparently...
I haven't seen
Apparently everything prior wasn't even on the Pro. Which is...
Well, how do you mean?
Like, all the footage we'd seen prior to this trailer wasn't, like, it was on
normal PS4.
Regular-ass PS4, which is insane.
See, I thought it would have been on, a PC build.
You would think so, wouldn't you? That was
mock-up ones,
yeah. Because I was looking at the early stuff, and I was like, I'm going to need a PS4 Pro for this. No fucking way that's running on a regular PS4. Apparently it is.
Well, this is what I'm saying, though, Sean. I mean, this, if anything, is going to be the game to convince me to get an Xbox One X.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do not want to play that game... I know I was taking a piss in my tweet or whatever, but the sound of that fucking thing for No Man's Sky is bad enough. Like, really off-putting, horrific.
Is it really that bad yet? Because I've got my 4K telly now, and obviously I'm waiting for the excuse to get a PS4 Pro. Is it really that bad, the fan?
I was hoping that it'd be silent, because, you know, you expect it. But literally, from... the early days, it was pretty loud.
Shit.
And everyone that I know that's got a PS4 Pro has got the same thing. Mm. And after I tweeted that, loads of people going, there's something wrong with your PS4 Pro, mate, if it's making that noise. If there is, there's a lot wrong with a lot of PS4 Pros, because you get the same thing as well, don't you, mate?
Oh yeah, it's ridiculously loud. And obviously people said change the thermal paste. It's quite... I mean, it does pick
that.
Up a lot of...
Yeah, not changing the thermal paste on a console.
Out of dust, but even so, yeah, it's just ridiculously loud. I mean, I felt like it was quiet at the beginning. Maybe that's compared to my previous PS4. But yeah, it's ridiculously loud now. Ridiculous.
What a shame.
And then you've got the Xbox One X is silent, right? Is it silent?
Yeah, I mean, it does this weird thing where, well, I mean, at least mine does. I think John does it too, where every, few minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, it suddenly goes, woo! It feels like it's sort of clearing out dust and whatever. But yeah, it's silent for most of the time. It's you don't really hear it, unlike the PS4. I just checked, actually, Sean. Yeah, and Sean is right. They've said that basically all the footage is confirmed to be 4K running on the Pro. It's interesting they confirmed it to be 4K, I guess, because a lot of games really these days aren't quite full 4K, or they're like, can be 1080p at 60, this and the other, but yeah, it's nice. And they've also confirmed it's gonna be like 4K HDR and whatnot on the Xbox One X as well, but yeah,
cool,
it looks stunning.
I can't wait. It's looking pretty damn good. That is going to be a good game.
I don't think I said how many, but they obviously said there's going to be at least one other gameplay video. I can't remember how many they had done for these and for previous games, if it's just three, but yeah, it looks stunning. I mean,
they'll do, like, my prediction is they'll do another one of these, a gameplay trailer, and then they'll do an online trailer.
I was going to say, the online stuff, like, because we all forget how much money GTA Online has made versus, like, just, you know, selling copies of the game and the campaign and stuff. Like, it is completely dwarfed by the online stuff.
Do you think it will include online at launch? Because obviously GTA Online didn't.
That's the point. I don't know.
Is there a benefit to keeping it launch, or do you reckon is a benefit actually saying it launches, was it October? So I guess it went out for Christmas though. So maybe like November, they'll drop the online stuff. Who knows? But
which is fine by me because it gives the campaign time to breathe and, you know, like, I'm not going to have time to do the campaign and play with mates because, like, everyone's going to be on it. Definitely. So it's going to be constant.
For the first Red Dead, I didn't finish it. I liked it, but fundamentally for me, like, traversing on a horse just didn't feel as fun as bombing around in a car in GTA, and that's sort of a reason why I sort of stopped. And I think other things came out.
Yeah, but I've never got lost in a GTA game like I got lost in Red Dead.
I completely just went on little adventures. When you met,
like,
a stranger and stuff, and I had those moments. I didn't quite get to Mexico, but I did a few hours. But I just, I mean, other things must come out and whatever. I stopped playing it, but I'm ridiculously excited for this. And for the first time in a long time, I saw this trailer and thought, man, I think this requires a day off from work to have a day where you just really get involved and experience it. Yeah, I cannot wait.
Right, okay, last story then. Luigi's dead. Now, this weirded me out because I was away the weekend and all of a sudden I just checked my phone and everyone's putting RIP Luigi and I'm going, what? And then someone tweeted a GIF from the Nintendo Direct that was out. When was this? Friday?
I can't remember. Was it? No, it's a bit earlier than that.
Or maybe it was Thursday. And it was Luigi being killed. And I just thought, is this a joke? But no. I mean, yeah, he's not actually dead, is he? It was just like this cutscene to introduce this new character to the new Smash game. But, I mean, it was pretty bad. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I've been showing Harry every single Smash Bros. Video because, I mean, he's well excited. He's all, like, Mario and stuff. Like, it's got all his favourite characters in it. I mean, I did show him this in the end, but I was fucking worried about it. He loves Luigi, and it wasn't exactly like, sort of, you know, he's dead. No, he got stabbed in the throat by Jeff.
This is all because they revealed that two Castlevania characters, Simon and what's the other one, Richter Belmont from Castlevania, are coming to Smash Brothers. And yeah, so
they need new naming convention for that game.
They're all the same family, mate. It's a thing. So yeah, Death is a recurring character in Castlevania. So the way they decided to reveal this was Death showing up and fucking swiping Luigi with his scythe. And his soul just coming out of his body, and then, which is enough. But then I can't remember if it was at the very end or just a bit later on. Just a shot of Luigi's ghost just looking at his own corpse.
And then trying to get back in it before that big horrible face was just like looking over him. It was pretty intense, and I did not expect anything like this from Nintendo.
No, I mean, it's sort of presented as like, hee-hee, look what's happened. But the actual fact of it is horrific.
Not only that, he you know, they're supposed to be, there's that phrase, what is it, the Disney of computer games or whatever, but it showed the vicious murder of one of their like lovable characters that, you know, kids have grown up with and loved, and like Harry just absolutely adores. He's got a little Luigi teddy and everything. There he is, struggling to get back into his own corpse. Like, it's like, it was deep, man. When I watched it, I was like, and then I sort of played it, and Harry just like blankly stared at it. I don't think he quite knew what was going on. So I think we got away with it, but yeah. I mean, it wasn't intentional. He at the moment is obsessed with going on a news feed on the Nintendo Switch and just playing videos off of it.
Right.
So, well, I sort of walked into the front room and he was watching it. Yeah, no, he loves it. He loves it for that.
Fair enough.
I just want to watch the videos, he says. There, off he goes.
What was the was the other reveal? It's the guy from Donkey Kong Country, isn't it? The baddie. King K. Rool. He's in it.
I mean, it's cool. I just assumed that when they said that, you know, everyone that's ever been in a Smash Brothers game is going to be in this one, I thought that was it then.
Yeah, it's enough,
I didn't
isn't
think
it?
That they were going to be adding characters, but they are. So, yeah.
Well,
I mean,
Winter's game
fine,
out.
But now all I'm doing now is worrying about if I should buy it or not, because if it's got stuff like that in it, I thought it was just cartoony violence.
Oh, it totally is. I don't think there'll be anything like that in the game.
Could you imagine that in the game, like Mario decapitated, like his head
rolling
off of Star Fox?
I assume that's like a cutscene from the game.
Nah, that'll just be like a reveal.
I think it's just a promo thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But yeah, can you imagine if new Smash Brothers comes out and they're like, oh yeah, it's 18, BBFC. Never none of that Peggy shit. It's like,
Peggy, 18.
We've got fatalities now. Look, Scorpio's in it and he's going to rip his head off to show his melting head. And he's going to spit like acid in Mario's moustache, which is going to burn through to the back of his skull. Like, it's just horrific.
Someone's fatality will be that, you know, the title screen for Mario 64 where you can like grab his face like that, but you're just like pulling it apart.
You keep pulling
just tearing chunks off it.
You just keep pulling it. And
then the skin
and
starts
to do
tearing.
It, you have to hold the Switch Joy-Cons either side and just like pull them apart yourself, so it feels like you're just ripping Mario's face.
Yeah, just going like, Mamma Mia.
Crack, clunch, you just see the skin tearing.
Yeah, and you hear Peach in the background laughing.
It's just maniacally. Yeah, God, what are they going to do to Toad? Right, let's... is Toad in it?
I think. Good. No fucking idea. I have this thing where I occasionally remember, I don't really like Smash Brothers. Not really. Like, I bought the last one on the Wii U, and there's maybe a couple of hours on it, and I was just like, nah. Why have I
but for you, as a massive fan of Nintendo, and there being fuck all else on the horizon, surely you're thinking about buying this one, right?
I don't know, because there's, like, as far as the Switch is concerned, it's still just this amazing place to play indie games. I'm not...
Yeah, it's Vita 2.
Yeah, it is.
Get FIFA, Sean. Get FIFA this year. Spend your money on FIFA and we'll all play. Pro clubs. And that's it for the news. That's all that happened. So should we get on to what we've been playing?
Definitely.
Matt, kick us off.
I was going to ask you if I can go first, because I'm ridiculously excited to talk about the game I've been playing this week.
Go on.
I've been playing Detroit Become Human.
Hey!
Yeti!
Oh, Amanda.
Ooh,
the
game everyone likes.
The game everyone likes. So I briefly mentioned this last week, and I said, oh, I've played the first mission. It was quite good. And I'm like, you're like, Dave, Matt, just, you know, wait till you get to the other missions. And I'll be honest, I thought it was an excellent game.
Oh, you are fucking insane.
I've had a great week playing this. It's got a lot of issues, and let's just go through the issues before we get into the positive stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, firstly, I think it looks great. I think graphically it looks fantastic.
I thought we were going through the issues first.
I'm so excited to talk about this game. I should probably calm down. So, issues. So,
have you got notes in front of you?
I had some, but I'm sort of a bit too giddy to even cover the notes. I've just had such a great week playing this game.
And that is awful.
It's not awful. I listened to the previous two podcasts where you and James talked about it, and you said, yeah, it is a pile of shit, isn't it? I was like, it's not a pile of shit.
It is,
no,
Matt.
Okay, right. So, story-wise, the reason I think it all goes down to one thing, is that I really got emotionally attached to the Kara and Alice story. I mean, basically, I can't be doing with a child in peril. I can't do it. Have you guys seen The Pursuit of Happiness, the Will Smith movie?
I've
not seen that, no.
Yeah, do you say you have, Sean?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, well, it's basically sort of like Will Smith, who's like a father with like how much money and without like many opportunities, looking after his son. Oh my God, it's in floods of tears or that thing. I cannot handle a story where it's like parent struggling to support their child. And the fact is, like, Alice is a young girl in the game. She, I think she must be like 5 or 6, so it's not a million miles away from the age of my own daughter. And yeah, there were some scenes. I mean, I was nowhere near like getting fully upset, but when the game ended on my first run through and it didn't quite end the way I wanted to, I was devastated. I mean, I've been loving this game for the whole week, and when it ended the way it did,
oh, I'd love to know how yours ended.
This game absolutely calls out for like a spoilery like discussion, because one of the best things I loved about this game this week is talking to a guy in the office every single day who lent me the game, and they're like, okay, so what did you do last night, where are you, what happened, and our decisions were so different. Like, I've seen so many more chapters than he did. He saw those things I didn't because of certain characters I kept alive or died or so on and so forth. But yeah, after listening to the podcast the last two we did and reading a few of the reviews and stuff today, Neurogamers, yeah, story-wise, without Carl and Alice, it's not great. Like, Marcus's story, it's fine, but it didn't really like touch me emotionally. Connor's story is quite interesting. I think he's a really good character. Connor is a cop with the human partner called Hank.
So the problem I have with Connor is that he's the most advanced robot that's ever been built. Like, that's his story. He was built to work for the FBI.
He's the most robot
of all of them. Like, even them, like, talking, he was like, hello, I am Connor, the robot, and I am here to help you. Whereas the others are, like, just talking like normal human beings. It's like, what is that? Why is he a robot? And the other ones like humans.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Many of the same criticisms you had last time absolutely are true, and I believe them to be the case as well. I think one of the things you said, Dave, is that fundamentally you didn't really believe any of the androids were anything but androids. And I think you said something along those lines, yeah. But basically, none of them really seem like human. And the whole story of the game is, you know, some of these androids are becoming deviant, which is a term for how they describe androids that essentially go against their programming and start feeling what they call emotions, but it's just their sort of software breaking down or whatever. But yeah, and after listening to that, I think you are definitely right. Like, I never truly once thought these androids are breaking through and like starting to feel emotions. I never ever really thought that. They always felt like
the whole androids. Theme was that they're not robots anymore. They're a new form of intelligent life that should be treated with the same sort of attitudes towards other forms of intelligent life. And that never worked for me. It never hit home with me. He didn't manage to convey that well enough for it to be believable.
They were basically all androids, but Kara, who tries to look after Alice, the young girl, very early on, I never thought, oh yeah, she's an android with emotions. It just felt like she's a kind of a person. It's hard to describe it, but it never truly felt like, oh, these are machines learning and changing and becoming sentient life. And it never really got the way for me, sadly. I thought, so Marcus, who's like the story of like the android trying to like basically, I guess sort of cause an android revolution. His story was fine. I really loved the character. He was the painter character he was with. I thought he was a great character. I think a lot of the characters are really well written. Although I will say,
now he's had a piss.
No. I will say the writing generally is fine and good. And actually, I think it's a lot less laughable than David Cage's previous games for sure.
Ooh.
But what?
It's a lot less laughable than possibly Beyond Two Souls. But I still think it was pretty laughable
than Heavy Rain. I mean, like, Heavy Rain, that was a funny game because it was so po-faced. And I think actually this game's less po-faced, even though it tries to tackle much bigger subjects and then fails. It tries to tackle, like, civil rights and slavery. And I guess at one point it sort of goes into almost like Holocaust stuff, which is ridiculous. And it fails in every single one of them. So although it tries to tackle the larger subjects and fails, I actually think generally the quality of the writing is better than Heavy Rain and a lot less laughable. There was maybe like one or two like funny moments, particularly I think the drawings in the domestic abuse scene, where it's basically like trying to play out just show you what the story is in like these child's drawings. I thought that was ridiculous, but genuinely I thought the writing was really good. I thought the branching paths were really, really well conceived. And like I said, I spoke to this guy, a Joe at work, and we've had loads of different scenes, loads of things happen that didn't happen in his, and I think that's really good. The flow charts.
I agree with you there. That's the best thing that the game does. Yeah. I mean, when I was watching James's playthrough as I was playing it, I was pretty blown away by how different our stories were and like how there were huge sections of the game that James didn't see and huge sections of the games that I didn't see because we'd made different decisions or we'd failed different QTs. That side of it is good, don't get me wrong. But my point was that it's not good enough because if you don't give a shit about the story, then that stuff doesn't matter. Yeah, I don't care what you did.
But like I said, the story of Carl and Alice, like, that totally got me emotionally. And if it wasn't for that, maybe I'll have a different story, a different opinion of it. But that was part of the game. And that was absolutely enough for me to drive. I actually love those scenes. And I think also you said on the previous pod, Dave, that that could be a game in its own right. And that absolutely could. I'd love to see that game with them too, but clearly it's not going to happen.
But then, okay, so based on that, if they're your favourite characters, did the twist not just piss you off unbelievably piss you off?
I mean, the twist, like a few other scenes, were basically totally pointless. And I guessed it not because there were clues, but just like, oh, that's probably what's going to happen. And then it happened, and I'm like, okay, well, that's that. Like,
but then it doesn't make sense because it goes against all rules that the game had previously set out. Like, it was just, as I said last time, it was like going all the way through the film with a character called Brian, and then at the end going, his name's not Brian, it's Steve. And you're going, but everyone calls him Brian, his mum called him Brian, and don't worry about that, it's Steve. Like, that was what the twist was like to me. It was just completely like sort of ignore everything you've laid down, and it's just that's the twist.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The twist was stupid, and it sort of happened. And like one of the other characters is trying to say, hey, we should probably talk about this thing, and then they're like, no, let's leave it, let's carry on. And then obviously it's revealed.
Yeah, totally.
And I was like,
it was as if one of the writers just went, like one of the co-writers just went, right, okay, I need to highlight how bad this is. But the character's going, hey, should we discuss this turn of events? No. The game just continues.
I thought that, I mean, I would love to do a whole podcast on this, but I guess no one else can really bother because it's been a while and I know James wouldn't want to
do it. No one listens to it.
There's a scene which definitely evokes sort of Last of Us stuff, and I think a lot of it, I had definitely the last of sort of end of the world vibes in this game, even though it technically wasn't. It's just because basically every single fucking human character is anti-android. There's no subtlety in this game whatsoever, which is such a shame. Like, basically everyone you meet is anti-android. The androids are trying to work out their own way. I wish there was some more subtlety. There's one character, like the painter, who he's empathetic towards. I think Marcus is his sort of android carer. He's empathetic. Everyone else is just anti-android. And I wish there was more subtlety in that. But clearly David Cage does not deal in subtlety, which is a total shame. But
hey, you stupid robot, you wires. when the guy's what is it, his son turns up. Hey, what are you doing to talk to a machine, man? I was just like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, but basically there's every sort of cliche under sun. I mean, we've got Hank who's like the cop who like drinks too much, and he's got a tragic backstory, and it's like every single cop cliche in the world is used. We've got like the son of the painter who comes in and does, you know, exactly what you expect. A lot of that was terrible and cliched, and like I said, David Cage could not deal with subtlety, but I can get over that. Like, one thing I've been thinking about, like, no other game I don't think would ever be like criticized in the way David Cage's games are. Like on a previous podcast, we were basically talking about the history of computer games and marching storylines and how this doesn't or does compare to, say, like the Monkey Island games or no, I think Knights of the Old Republic, I think it's like a story and a game that James brought up previously. Like David Cage's games get like such a hard time. I mean, obviously there's issues in his games. He tries to tackle lost objects and often fails, and we could maybe comment on, you know, whether it's possible to separate the art from the artist with the accusations of his studio, etc. But I can certainly put that to one side and just judge the game on what it does. And for me, I thought it was really good. I mean, I guess if I had to review it, I'd probably give it like an 8 out of 10. I'm certainly not giving it like a 10 out of 10, but I've absolutely loved the week playing it. I thought it was really fascinating learning about how people's different playthroughs go. I think it tries to tackle some subjects, often fails, but fundamentally for me, the story of Carl and Alice, this is the most emotional I've got about a game this year. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of, I guess, emotional games. There was Captain Spirit, which sort of, tried to go there, and we still got Life is Strange 2. But yeah, I mean, when I finished this game first time, it was a really sad ending. And the reason I had this sad ending was basically there was a scene with Kara where basically you're running and you're hammering X to run, basically. And then it instantly went to another QTE where it had four options, one of which was X, obviously. And then the X was not the option I wanted, but by that point I'd already been hammering it and I chose the wrong thing and it all went tits up after that. It didn't quite end at that exact moment, but that set off then a chain of events where it was just a really, like, genuinely sad, horrific, devastating ending, to the point where I thought, okay, this is not how
I'm interested, because I think you took my path, but the result of that path was different on ours.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to hear what you did. If I can talk about the QTE, the result I didn't want, the result I wanted to choose was play dead, and I didn't do that one. I really wanted to do it one, but I'd already hammered X, and I chose something else.
We ended up in the same place, yeah. But I think we had different outcomes.
Like, there's so much of those last scenes which are absolutely devastating. I'd love to talk about it in a spoiler thing, but clearly we're not going to do it. But there's so many absolutely devastating moments.
Maybe we can have a quick chat after the music today.
Absolutely devastating moments. Just, and then I thought, okay, because this game, you can basically go back and like replay sections, and those essentially create a new save for you, but you can make different decisions when you go back to certain chapters. I thought, there's no way I'm letting these two end the way it did. I'm going back. I went back a second time. I played the last like three or four chapters because everyone had been alive up to that point. And then that other ending was even more devastating and even more bleak. And I was like, for fuck's sake, like it was horrific. I mean, it was like, God, this is.
And somehow, I don't know how, but I ended up with just Carla and Ben from The Walking
Ben popped
Dead.
Up somehow. So I was like, okay, this is getting late. And I was like, I've got to do this again. So then I looked at a guide about how to like get through certain sections. But the thing is, I did it. And at the end, I ensured they were alive, but by that point, obviously, I'd replayed the same scenes, and obviously, the emotional sort of connection to it had been lost with like replaying the scenes and stuff. So, yes, I'm glad that I got to see their happy ending. But it wasn't like it was the first time. But yeah, I was devastated. But yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
I mean, that you thought James was angry after the Yakuza chat. I mean, I can't wait for him to turn up next week. I'm not even sure he'd make it to the podcast. He'd be so angry.
Like James said like a few weeks ago, David Cage's games, like Channel 5 games with good technology. Channel 5 films with good technology. I mean, like, let's be honest, video game stories are pretty few and far between. Like, really. Like, I mean, like, you can level out accusation at a lot of games, I think.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying, but I think this is even subpar for those.
I mean, you're going to say that because you didn't connect with the story, but I certainly did, and I think it's different to
I mean, you're not alone, because, there's people on Rollmuck that vehemently defend this and say that's David Cage's best game, and
I loved Heavy Rain at the time, but even then I was like, there's some things that are stupid, like driving into oncoming traffic and whatnot, but yeah, this is definitely...
Yeah, but I would say this is even more stupid. Like, I think this is more stupid than that. You know, there's that whole... Right, okay, so it's all about the twist of Heavy Rain. Without spoiling it, you could look at that and say, okay, yeah, I can see why some people think this is stupid, but I still think it kind of makes sense. With a twist in this, you're just like, no, it makes zero sense. Like, they actively gave reasons why this would be impossible.
Yeah, the twist is stupid, but it's so poorly done that I sort of just like, it was like a non-event when it happens. Like, okay, that's happened. Okay, we'll move on. Like, that wasn't like a crucial, it wasn't like the end of Sixth Sense. We were like, the whole thing's built up to this, and that's what it is.
That was the peak of the story, though.
No, well, I don't think it was. Although I will say the last two of each chapter did sort of drag, because it felt like towards that area they were building up to something. And I don't think that's the peak of the story at all.
Yeah. Well, it was the peak. Well, yeah, I mean, it was a major beat in Karen. Whatever faces story.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was, but it was just so badly done. I thought, well, I'm not going to count as a story beat, frankly.
I'm just going to ignore the bad stuff. All right, well, you enjoyed it, and I'm happy
I'm so
for
glad
you,
I played it. And like,
it
anyone listening, who, like, you know, has been put off by a lot of the negative press and obviously stuff we talked about, I think you should give it a go. I mean, I was definitely enamored of it, but you know, I got totally drawn in. I thought it was excellent, and I definitely prefer
there you go,
to have
Sean.
No,
maybe you should give it a go, mate.
No.
It's the easiest thing in the world to hate David Cage games. It's like, oh, Jesus, like, you don't have to think
it's
about it.
It's the correct thing to do, man.
But I don't know, if someone gets enjoyment out of it, but people's live accusations and like hate it just because it's David Cage without really giving it, I think.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can't just automatically go on and defend it. I'm not suggesting you're doing this at all.
After you guys talked about it, I was like, well, I love the previous stuff, but I'm not going to bother this. And like, I had low expectations going in, but yeah, like, you know, I was pleasantly surprised and I really enjoyed it. I thought it looked good. I think most things improved and I can't. It's too emotional. Fair enough. That's all I've been playing with this week. I've got a game which I'm going to talk about next week, which I'm really excited to talk about, but that's next week.
Cool. All right, Sean.
Just a couple of short ones. I don't know if you've seen, there is a sale on the Switch eShop. I haven't. I've picked up a bunch of stuff, and I've barely played any of it because I'm a fucking idiot. But one game I have had a chance to try out is Membrane. I don't know if any of you have seen this. It's been on the eShop for ages. I think it was like £8 and now it's like £3.50 or something. Just a really fun, quirky little platformer where basically, well, puzzle platformer, the hook being that you shoot these little blocks that then become like platforms that you can stand on and run and jump around on. And it's a bit physics-y, like, so if you shoot a load of these at a wall, like, they'll all stick to each other and they'll make, like, a straight horizontal platform, but then as it gets heavier and heavier towards the end, it'll start bending down and basically that combined with, like, pools of acid and sort of moving parts with, like, things rotating around and stuff, yeah, just good fun. Like, for £3.50, like, it's proper fucking
good. So what's the game called again?
Membrane.
Okay, cool.
It's got, like, this sort of weird thing where basically the implication is that you're traveling around inside someone's body. It's a bit odd. But yeah, properly enjoying that. Have a look. The other game I've been playing, well, I mean, I've been playing shitloads of it, but I don't want to talk about it too much because it is Hollow Knight and James isn't here. And he's just finished it. Well, he's got the first not very good ending, which I believe is the first ending of three. I think he said he's like, took him like 30 hours.
Is he and is this like the common narrative that you want to go back and get 100% before you've finished it? Is that the way
I'm not
works?
Sure. He's not, I think, pretty sure he's going to crack on with it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and I can see why. It is fucking brilliant. Like, because me and James have been talking about it, which, I mean, that's a milestone in and of itself, in that this is the first game where me and James have actually just started texting each other privately about it.
It's a success.
Yeah. And I was saying to him, like, because it's got a lot of Dark Souls-y elements, and it's like, yeah, it's a bit like Dark Souls, huh? Because, you know, there are so many games that take, you know, a lot of things from Dark Souls, like, oh, it's really hard, and when you die, you have to find your corpse again and to get your stuff back. And it's got all that, but it might be like the first game I've played that actually feels a bit like Dark Souls. Like, because obviously Dark Souls 2 and 3, very good games. I'm not one of those people that's like, the first one's the best and everything else is shit. Like, the Dark Souls 2 and 3 are great, but they do suffer from familiarity. And like, obviously that's like an impossible problem, because how do you make a game where the whole point was that the first one was insanely difficult? So half your player base are like total fucking veterans, whereas there's still going to be new people coming in, and it's just, you know, how do you work through that?
How do you make Rocket League 2?
Basically, yes.
You know, you've made such a revolutionary, unique game, and it wasn't the first. Like, so some people going, well, what about Battle Castle? what about Demon Souls? Which I get, but like, a lot of people, their first Souls game was Dark Souls, and how do you capture that again?
Yeah.
And I mean, they came close with Bloodborne.
They did,
but there was still a lot of familiarity there.
And like, after the first Dark Souls, like, I was never, like, I haven't been scared of or unsettled by a Soulsborne game since. But this, like, properly recaptures that, because it's got similar elements, but it's the unfamiliarity, like, because it's a different setting and it's a different type of game. It, like, I'm like really anxious going into some of the new areas, because I'm like I think I'm quite far through it, relatively speaking, and like, basically the whole point is, because all the characters in the game are insects, right, and you basically, you're going through a nest. So you start at ground level and you're just going down and down and down and down. And it just gets like more and more grim as you go. And it's like, it's fucking horrible, but with like occasional, like quite beautiful bits. And it just, I don't know, like I feel, I'm trying to think what the word is. You know, when you're playing through Dark Souls and it's kind of miserable.
Yeah, it's really oppressive, but, isn't it?
Yeah, oppressed, that's the word, oppressive. Like, it's that, like I'm getting that feeling from it, which I've not had since the first Dark Souls. But again, this compulsion to see it through, like I'm not just being like, oh, well, this is making me miserable, get it off. Like, no, like there's just enough of moments where you sort of break through and you do really well and you feel good about how you're progressing through the game that it just drags you through. There's like, you know, I mentioned last time, there's like just really smart things about some of the bosses that just like wrong foot you a little bit. It started doing more of that like within the levels themselves, which has been really interesting. And again, I'm not going to spoil it, but just certain like little rug pulls and stuff. But you know, when they're smart enough that it's enjoyable. There's been some bullshit like, oh, you're walking along and then the ground that you're on suddenly gives way and there's spikes underneath it. So, well, fuck off. Like if you were really good, though, you do have time to react. But if you're totally not expecting it, it's just like, that just feels a bit cheap.
Is that like the first time in Dark Souls where you come across like those fake chests and you're like, oh, great?
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying that screams Sen's Fortress to me.
Yeah, I guess. Just like that's one example where it feels a bit cheap, but there are others where like it like just properly messes with you, but in just ways that are clever enough that it's like, well, that technically was cheap, but it was clever enough that I don't mind so much.
So how many hours have you put into this so far?
So I think I'm like 18 hours in now. And I just like, I constantly feel like, right, well, this must be the last bit. Like, surely I'm getting towards the end now. There are so many bits that feel so grand or creepy or like, or just difficult that you're like, fuck, this must be it. And there's always more of it, which like normally I would hate. Like, you know, I don't really have time for long games these days. And especially like, you know, a lot of people have said, because it's a 2D indie game, everyone's like, cool, I'll finish that in 12 hours. So that, you know, that's worth starting, but actually like people are, you know, putting like 50-60 hours in to get all three endings, but I don't mind because it's just been that satisfying and that interesting to work my way through it. Like the combat's like got a lot better since I've realized you can actually parry in it. Like basically if you attack someone at the exact moment that they would have struck you, then you just like properly deflect them and put them off balance. And so just discovering, like, the game doesn't tell you that, but just discovering that's been really cool. Getting more of these, like, you get these little tokens or badges, I forget what the proper term for them is, that just, like, change your abilities a little bit. And it's just been, like, really enjoyable figuring out, like, decent combos with those. Like, you can play the game, like, really differently because you get, like, so you have, like, your normal melee attacks, then you get these, like, magic spells as well, and it's, like, focusing on, like, the magic stuff or the melee stuff has been really interesting. Doing things like you have like, so these tokens will do things sort of outside of combat, like showing like where you are on the map or things like, you know, so when an enemy drops some currency, like the currency just automatically flies over to you. But then you like, so say you're stuck on a boss, it's like, right, hang on, I can turn them off because I know where I'm going to get to the boss, and then I can equip something else which might then, you know, allow me to play a bit differently. So that's cool.
Does that have a Dark Souls thing where you sort of, okay, I need to get to this area because I need to maybe like grind out a certain currency or get a certain thing and I'll go back? And does it have that, or is it very much just like you're pushing on and you find things along
really,
the way rather
like,
than navigating away from the from the core path?
Yeah, like there's no leveling up in it. There's like, there has the sort of Zelda thing of like you get four pieces of a thing and then you get an extra notch on your health bar, but like they're so few and far between that like you couldn't really just sort of go like, right, I'm not going to progress anymore, I'm going to just earn some extra stats or whatever. Like, you can't really do that. And again, all the token things give you extra abilities, they're all just like in specific locations in the game, so you've just got to explore and find those. You can totally like if you are struggling, you could perhaps sort of go, hang on, I'm going to slow down and look at the map. Where have I not been? Where can I see openings on the map that, like, now that I've got new abilities, I might be able to go back and find new areas and stuff? But I mean, but again, that's amazing in and of itself because you can do that expecting to find, like, oh, here's like another little cave with an item in it that is useful. But like sometimes it's like, oh no, you've found like a crack in the wall and it goes through to an entirely new area of the game. That like, it's just absolutely obscene. Like it feels like, so there's so much of it, but it doesn't feel overwhelming. It just feels generous.
Like, that's good. And like is there like a hidden lore and that sort of stuff? Or is it?
Yeah, like I'm like getting quite into the story and the setting and stuff. And again, you know, I said last time, it's kind of silly because it is a world just populated by insects. But it's, yeah, like it's well written enough that it's quite believable. And, like, you know, you do, like, have, like, favourite characters and stuff and, like, certain vendors that you'll be happy to see again. And it's just, yeah, just a really nice sort of snapshot of a dying world, which, again, is, you know, very, very Dark Souls. Yeah, I fucking love it. I'm excited for James coming back and talking about finishing it.
Yeah, it does sound absolutely brilliant. I've got all the things on this, but it sounds so good.
£10 on the Switch?
Yeah, I was just checking out. It's £10.99. Yeah. And I've got like a massive coast journey this week, and maybe it's the perfect time for it.
Do it, mate. Do it. Yeah. It's so good. Like, you know, like Dead Cells has come out, as we all know, because we've seen the excellent IGN review of it.
Twice.
Yeah. Yep. And like people are enjoying that and that's really cool. But I'm just like, mate, I'm all right. Like between like this and Dead Cells and like Iconoclasts, which came out on the Switch the other week, like fucking hell, if you like Metroidvanias, like you are set from now until Christmas, I think, at this rate. It's ridiculous.
Yaku's Island Express.
Yeah.
Another one.
It's fucking good, man.
Yeah, I'm going to do another run at that, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Harry's been talking about it a lot recently about wanting to go back to it. Yeah. So I think I could see that happening. Although we are currently doing a completely new run of Mario Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it depends how quickly we get tired of that. But, yeah.
That is.
Good game. Still a good game. Right, is that what
that
you've
is
got?
Me, mate. Yeah. I said I've bought other stuff, but I've just not touched half of it because fucking Hollow Knight.
What else have you bought?
I'm gutted. There's
what else did I buy? Hang on, I'll fire up the Switch. So one of the games I got was Neo Atlas 1469. Have either of you seen this?
No.
So it looks like a kind of shit, low budget Japanese game, but with it's just a really interesting idea. I've no idea if it's actually any good, but I was just properly charmed by the idea of it. Basically, so it's this game set in 1469 where it's like you're in Europe and nobody knows what the rest of the world looks like. No one's gone exploring yet. And you're in charge of like sending out these sending out boats to just chart the oceans. And then they come back and they report to you like what they found. So you're like, you sail off in this direction and they'll come back and they'll go, okay, well, we found this country. Like we found this bit of land here and it's shaped like this. And basically they're all talking bollocks. Like it doesn't, like the world as we know it doesn't exist in the game. They're making stuff up as they go. But you can choose whether to believe them or not. And if you choose to believe them, then what they tell you they discovered is true. So someone could sail like, you know, east from the UK and just be like, oh yeah, we found this huge landmass after, you know, we sailed for like half an hour and found this. And you'd be like, okay. And then that becomes real. And I think like the main game is that you basically, so you're operating like a trading company and it's all about like believing or not believing your explorers to sort of create the conditions that suit you. But sometimes they'll be like, oh yeah, we found the edge of the earth. It's flat, it turns out. And you can just be like, yeah, okay. Or no, I think that's bollocks. Or it can be like, oh yeah, we found out the earth is actually like being carried around on the back of like a giant. And you can be like, yeah, okay, sounds good. And then that...
So people suggest this stuff and you can either agree with it or...
Yeah, or you can disagree with it. And if you agree with them, then what they said is true.
See, because that's that... I mean, that was what excited me. The only thing that I liked about Kentucky Route Zero, because that had that... that was a little bit like that, where people would... I think the first example was, oh, what's your dog called? Mm-hmm. And you would just like it gave you several options, mm-hmm. and you chose an option, and then from then on, your dog was called that. And
right, yeah.
There was, yeah, it did some interesting things with that, but it didn't really. That was only just like a side thing that game was doing, rather than a main focus in exploring how that could completely change your experience. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like this game has taken that idea and ran with it.
I mean, like I say, it might be quite interesting. Shit. It just seemed like a charming enough idea that. But yeah, this is the other thing. So they launched it at like £40, and I was like, man, what are you doing? Like, no one's gonna like. It was a game that people were only going to pick up as like a bit of a punt. So yeah, they've had the sense to knock 50% off in the sale. So, so bought that. I've bought Jackbox Party Pack 4. Because that's like a tenner, and I'm going to my brother's this weekend, so that'll happen.
You have to let us know if there's any new games in that that's worth playing.
Yeah, I think
is there a new Quiplash?
I don't know. I think there's new Fibbage, which I'm a fan of, so I'm looking forward to that. But I don't know. We'll see. And I also got 1979 Revolution Black Friday. Have any of you heard of this?
No.
It's a Telltale-esque game, but it's set. During the Iranian Revolution in 1979, which obviously...
Oh, right, not like just after Christmas.
No.
Just after, was it Thanksgiving?
And yeah, obviously, issue close to my heart. My father-in-law is Iranian and was actually, like, kicked out of the country during the revolution because he was part of the Shah's army that got overthrown. So yeah, really interested to get into that. Like, apparently it's well good and the developers had to go into hiding after it was made because it's... about a politically contentious subject. So yeah, really looking forward to getting into that as well.
I've seen a bunch of people on Twitter this week sharing pictures of a mech game. Is there also a new mech game that people really about?
This is so it's not come out. This is that Demon X Machina they showed at
E3. Okay, right.
Which is the one good thing they showed at E3. So yeah, that's a new mech game that's from like some of the people from Software who made the Armored Core games, which is why I'm well excited about it. But yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, because I saw that. I was like, this. I obviously knew about that game got announced, but I guess I didn't put two together. But I was like, what is this new mech game that I've seen a few people tweet about and saying, look how good this looks?
But, yeah, just the art style is absolutely insane. Like, just looks beautiful. But yeah,
nice, babe.
Right. Yeah, I've been playing a game that some of you may have heard of called Call of Duty. Ha ha, what a joke.
Go on.
I've been playing the Call of Duty Black Ops Online beta this weekend, and it's been a mixed bag.
Oh, really?
The first time you look at it, you think, oh my Jesus Christ, that is a bad-looking game.
Really?
And I mean, I'm assuming they're still spending a lot of money in it. And the argument that was given with mates when I was playing it at their place, like I played it briefly at their place and then came home, downloaded it and played it at home, was a lot. I just went, my word, that looks awful. Like it really subpar. And they were saying, yeah, but it's really important that it runs at 60 frames. Like that's a really important part. But I'm thinking, I've played better looking games that have run at 60 frames. Like this is not like, I mean, doesn't Destiny's, no, the Crucible runs at 30.
Whole thing does, yeah, it's locked 30.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So that's a bad comparison. But I'm sure I've played 60 frame per second games that have looked a lot better than this. It doesn't really look that good. So the first night I played it on my own where I got home and I was sitting playing it in my own environment, I had a total blast with it, like a real good time with it. So the main thing that it's doing this time is that it's kind of nicking the operators from Rainbow Six Siege, but also the power-up system from Overwatch. So you've got a primary, your primary action on the left bumper is always a stim pack. So they've changed the health system where you don't just go red around the screens and then have to hide for a bit and then you get your health back. This time you've got an unlimited amount of injections that you can use. So when you get out of a gun battle, if you remember to do it, and you're not instantly even in another gun battle, you can just whack an injection into your arm and then get full health again. So it actually has a health system. It gets knocked down to a certain level and it will stay there unless you use a stim pack. And that's pretty good. I think that's better. That's a much better system than being here, watching your screen go a bit red and then trying to hide for a little bit before you get back into the action, because you're literally just shooting and then whacking your health up. And it's got quite a fast cooldown on that, so that you've basically always got health, like a health pack on you that you can activate. Then on the right bumper, you will have a special ability. So my favorite character so far has a grapple hook. So a lot like it was in Titanfall, you can just aim it at a part of the map, use it, and then, the advantage you get from it is brilliant because you move at such a pace that you can just really get. But like, if you're seeing a gun battle the other side of a bridge, for example, you can aim it just above their head, fly above them, turn around, and then start popping.
So you don't
them.
Have to aim at something specific. You literally aim in the air, and it.
No. You aim it at. Like, it's got to be a piece of scenery that is within reaching distance. Yeah. So there are times where you look up and you go to fire it and it says, no, that's out of reach. But for the majority, I mean, they're so close quarter maps that, I mean, I was just grappling onto everything. There was one bit where there was someone trying to fire at me outside a window. So I aimed to the left-hand side of it, and there was a little platform just outside the room that they were in. So I lay left and up and then grappled up. They hadn't noticed that I'd done that, so got in behind them and then shot them in the back, and I felt like a god. Otherwise, I would have had to run out in open cover and then climb up a ladder, and then, you know, by that time, they would have either killed me or realised what I was doing, but because I was quick to do this. There's another one. There's a third ability, which is obviously like Destiny and stuff, where you hit both bumpers at the same time, and it's different things for different operatives. The cool thing that it does, which might not sound cool, but for those of you that have played Rainbow Six, you'll understand why. If someone's picked that character, no one else on the team can pick it.
Okay.
Which at first, like, I mean, it was a hard thing to get your head around with Rainbow Six, because you were like, yeah, but I've got that character and I like it. But it just means that everyone in your team and everyone on their team are different characters. You know, that was a problem with Overwatch at times, where it was kind of like you'd face a team of, you know, all this one character. And it was obviously that stuff gets weeded out at the high level, but it's still pretty shit when you're seeing, or like if you're on a team and then someone picks a character that you are, and you're just thinking, oh no, I'm doing this job, you pick someone else, then we've got another angle to our attack instead with, you know, the same people. It don't really work. With this, I think it's the right thing to do, because you don't really know what you're coming up against. If everyone was picking the same dude, you'd understand what they were doing, and you know, it makes it a lot more boring. So I'm getting involved in these matches. The level design is not really sticking out as anything interesting. Visually, it's not too great, but I was just having a wild time just running around, trying these abilities, seeing what they do, and really getting into it. And it does have that issue where you spawn, die, but you do get a lot more health this time, so it's a little bit harder to take you down. You do have time to react and stuff like that.
I was going to ask if like the actual, was it time to death or whatever, like the saying that they say is, like, how long is an average life? Do you think it's got any longer, or is it still...
No, an average life is probably about the same. Okay. Because, I mean, you're walking into just groups of people, you just get taken out instantly. But as you're being fired upon, you do have a little bit of time to react now. You're not just instantly like... In the last one, in World War II, it was just like, you're dead. Like, that's it. Whereas this, you could take a little bit more damage. Then I played it on Sunday night, and I had a horrible time. I was just dying constantly. I was getting matched up against people that are level 30 in the beta already. And then the point was made by Chet, who I was playing with. He said, the problem is, if we wanted to get into Call of Duty this year, we're going up against people that have only just played Call of Duty for the past God knows how many years. This stuff is all second nature to them. And though there's been minor tweaks to gameplay, they can still carry across, because obviously they've got to serve their existing fans, the people that love the multiplayer of those games. And you know, they can transfer the skills from the last version of the game to this. So essentially you're playing people with thousands and thousands of hours of experience, and you look at the levels that people were raising to, it was just like, whoa, this is mad. You know, I'm level 2 and I've put a little bit of time into it. Well, that's an exaggeration. I was like level 6 or 7, and we're playing like level 30, 40 people and you're just going, they're just tearing us apart. And that game is not good when you're losing. It's so frustrating, because you get to the point where you spawn, walk, dead. Like, and it's just like, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, I don't know if it's changed anymore, but even when I hammered Modern Warfare 2 and I was like obsessed with it, and I was even like ringing in sick for work and booking holidays and all sorts to play it, that's how obsessed I was. Like, I remember that, I guess the first Christmas I went away, I maybe went home and came back, and after 2 weeks away, I was like, I've lost, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I've totally lost it. People have like literally hammered it every single day over the holidays was enough for me to not want to go back, which was a shame.
And I mean, The other point is that I'm trying to work out why I enjoyed it so much the first time. I haven't come to a conclusion on this. Part of me was thinking, hey, actually, this is pretty good. But part of me was also thinking, when was the last time that I played an online multiplayer competitive game like this? I mean, I've played Destiny 2 in the Crucible. That was one thing. But the last time was like Titanfall 2, which was, you know, coming on 2 years ago now. So maybe it's that I'm craving. Mm. I'm craving a sort of multiplayer shooter, deathmatch style thing like this. And maybe that's why I was enjoying it more, because it's like, holy shit, these games are brilliant. Yeah, I mean, well, Rainbow Six is not really like that, is it? Because it's not a run and gun game. Like, Rainbow Six is all about, as we've said a million times, it's not about the shooting, it's about making sure that your intel is spot on, that you know where the other players are. That's what it's all about. And using your gadgets and stuff like that. With this, it's literally running around shooting people. And Titanfall 2 was the last game like that I played and I adored. And that was a long time ago now. So maybe there's part of me craving multiplayer shooter. But then I could be wrong. It could just be a good multiplayer shooter. And I think it's going to take a lot more game time. Because, I played quite a bit of World War 2 and I thought it was excellent. But what stopped me playing it is that no one else was playing with me, so I think I got to a certain level where I needed to then start getting into the teamwork, and because I didn't have a team, it was kind of pointless. So I like that. Maybe I should give this a go.
And
when it comes out,
this beta doesn't have like the blackout mode, does it? Which is their battle royale.
No, that's no. I mean, this is just objective based stuff, and it's. The game mode I was getting into was the kill confirm stuff, which we all know. We've seen it in a million games since. But yeah, it's kill confirmed and it's really good fun. It's a shame that it's not on all week. It was only over the weekend. Because I want to put more hours into it. So sort of try and find out, whether I'm actually enjoying the game because of the game or enjoying the game because I'm craving a online competitive shooter like this. I had more fun, but I thought I was going to hate it. And I had at least one night where I'd come away just going, that was fucking brilliant. I loved that. Who knows? Who knows when that game comes out? I've also been playing Sales, but I'll talk about it next week because the fucking embargo lifts on Thursday. So this podcast comes out Wednesday, and yeah, shame. What a shame. But I've not completed it yet anyway. I'm rather completed before talk about it. So we'll do that.
All right, Philip. Okay, should we move on?
Who's Philip?
The IGN guy.
What's that? What do you mean?
He said, don't worry about it. I was in...
What did I say? That I was going to steal someone's review?
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay. I think he'd finished it. Oh, well, who knows? Who knows? Who could trust anything he says? Right, okay. What is it? Feedback? Not feedback. Letters and stuff. Now,
right, emails.
You can't say... Matt, you can't just say, it's. I keep thinking it's your job to read the emails out, Matt. I'm an idiot. Right.
Also, you said feedback, and that's literally the first thing you really do.
I'm really tired, man. I've been weird all day. Go on, let's go.
If you want to send us an email, thecomputergameshow@gmail.com. We got one email this week, and it was
one. What's
and
happened?
It was 700 words, so I'm not reading out the whole thing. It's from Richard Brook. He basically talks...
Poor Richard
Brook. He says, basically talks a lot about the fact that he really enjoys games with huge fucking maps, right? And he feels like a lot of podcasts he listens to, or just, you know, games media in general, are kind of shitty about that these days, sort of favouring...
They are. He's totally right.
Yeah. And he basically sort of discusses that for a bit, and then he says, like, what do you guys think? Do you think it's because of the rise of multiplayer franchises with short gameplay loops? Does the average gamer have enough time to play longer, larger games with big maps? Let's stop there and answer those, and then there's a couple more. I think it is purely a time thing, isn't it? I think it's just a lot.
I'm not so sure. Okay. I think it's a trend thing. I think when, especially when it comes to games media, they play so many games, the quantity of games they play, when there's a trend in gaming, that becomes very tiresome very quickly. Like, for example, you know, remember we went through that phase, it's like, oh my God, it's another war game.
Yeah.
And then that turned into, oh my God, the zombies are enemies. You know, and then you had the Assassin's Creed and the Ubisoft sort of thing of, oh my God, it's a massive map with lots of icons in it. You know, so because the quantity of these games that they're playing, when gaming goes through a trend, that's when it gets, they start to sort of say, oh God, not another one of these. Forgetting the fact that the people that they're talking to don't play every one of these. So maybe give it the time of day that it deserves.
Like, it's been a long time since the days of, like, remember the first Just Cause, where you were like, yeah, it's a very big open world, it's fuck all in it, like, why is it this big? Like, it really doesn't need to be.
It's been
a long time, I think, since I've played an open world game and just been like, I don't even understand why they've done this. Like,
yeah, this is just empty. Like, they seem to be a lot more.
Yeah,
dense,
they've all felt pretty populated. Like, you know, A in terms of characters milling about, and B in terms of, like, interesting things to do. But yeah, like, I do, my heart does still sink when it's like, here's a map full of icons. I haven't got the time, basically. But then, you know, games vary in how well they make those things optional.
Exactly.
I think in terms of...
Zelda.
Yeah. That's fine, because you put your own icons on the map there, so it's fine. You just... If you don't want an icon on the map, don't put the icon on the map.
So it's just about who puts the icons on first.
Yeah, just get off my fucking maps. Let me mark it myself.
Well, yeah, Far Cry was quite interesting this year with the way that it did it. That instead of just filling your map with icons, you either unlock them by going into towns and picking up maps, or by talking to strangers on the road, and that would unlock an icon on the map and stuff like that. So it was never really overbearing in that game. So I think devs are aware that can be a bit overbearing, and they need to come out with better ways of sort of doing that stuff. Of course, Zelda Breath of the Wild just absolutely fucking nailed it, because that world was so full of things to do.
And, like, and as
yet never looked,
as we later found out, did you ever see that? I think it was Tokyo Game Show, they did a presentation about how they designed the world and how it is, like, you know.
I did see it, yeah, but I can't remember the point they made.
It's like, yeah, like, you play Breath of the Wild and you're like, oh, it's just amazing how you're constantly just seeing things you want to go and do. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's not by accident. That was painstakingly designed. Like, they made sure that, like, pretty much wherever you were, you could see something interesting in the distance. And, like, and they talk about, like, the fact that all the hills in the game, like, if you have a hill that's, like, triangle shaped, that's way more interesting than, like, a more, like, a round or a blocky hill, because you get this choice between, like, well, I can either climb, like, directly up it, and then I'll see nothing over the horizon until, sorry, over the crest of the hill or whatever, until I get to the very top, or I can walk around the side of it and sort of slowly reveal what's behind it. And that's just a choice that people make subconsciously, and some people prefer different ways, stuff like that, that, like, this is the level they've thought about, and that's why the world feels so open and exciting and interesting to walk
that
around.
Sounds amazing. Tell me that video is still available somewhere.
It will be
watch.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure if you just Google, like, Breath of the Wild Tokyo Game Show,
that sounds fascinating. I'm gonna have to dig that out.
But
Breath of the Wild basically proved that it's not the size of the map, it's just if you believe there's gonna be adventures along the way, then it doesn't matter how far you go travel, you're willing to travel that far. It's like, it's when you ever play other games where one, there's 100 icons on the map, and two, like, you know, it's going to be a little bit laborious to travel from one end of the map to the other. Mm. Or it's like, I don't want to go because I might get, it might be like a random battle, or I might get killed. And it's just like a nightmare to you know, get back to where I was. Whereas Zelda, it was just, you know, I mean, for me personally, it's like, you love the adventure. You loved seeing what was around the corner.
Yeah, totally.
The other thing that Breath of the Wild did exceptionally well was not just, when I say map, I mean the actual navigation map. It had different shapes on the map. Like, so when you zoomed
in, contour lines,
and you saw a maze.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
You were like, whoa, shit, I need to go to that place to see what the hell that is. Or you'd see, like, a grouping of rocks that made a shape. You would go, shit, there's something there.
Yeah, you see like
oh,
a
right,
fucking...
Okay, I'm going to those groups of rocks.
Yeah, you see like
stuff.
A skull
you know,
shape and you're like, well, that's going to be a good time, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, I mean, that's what it was all about. Yeah. That was, and then it played with that idea where it had underground cities and stuff like that. Like that massive temple underground, like you'd never have seen it in the map and you only come across it because there's like a hole in the ground and you're thinking, what's down there? And then you walk over to a cliff edge and there's like this massive entrance that you would have only have seen if you just stumbled across it by walking about. Yeah, I mean, that game, expert level design. It was, incredible. Yeah. But no, I totally see your point. I mean, I don't think a large map is necessarily a bad thing. I think the reason why the media sort of, or you know, games reviewers and stuff tend to have this narrative that it's a big size because of the quantity of the sort of games that did become a bit of a trend, like who can make the biggest
map. Yeah, it's an easy thing to boast about,
you know,
isn't it?
Important
it's
like, stuff
oh, it's
like
fucking
that.
3 million square miles, and it's like...
It is, so everyone started doing it, and these people were forced to play these games, and that gets more tiresome quickly for them than it does for us. But, I mean, that seems to be where that sort of that idea and that feeling came from.
I would much rather like a much smaller map, knowing that every single, you know, meter there's something exciting to see and do, much more denser in terms of activities than a massive map where there's not a lot of things to do just to say, oh, we've got a map.
But that's not, it's not an either or,
miles,
is it?
Square miles, whatever.
Yeah, like give me a Hitman level over, for what was that racing game? Fuel. Did you ever play that? It was Codemasters. and it was, it's like post-apocalyptic racing game. And it was just like, and again, it was like, oh, the world's absolutely fucking massive. It's like, there's nothing in it. It was just loads of just...
Yeah, but it's not either or, is it?
No, absolutely.
It's not
but,
either
yeah.
or, because there are games out there with massive maps that are filled with shit, you know, like GTA, example, and no doubt Red Dead will be, but yeah.
So he then goes on to say, he says, what have been your perfectly sized and favourite game maps, big and small?
Well, I think we've covered them, haven't we?
I suppose so, yeah. I'm trying to think, like...
I mean, Breath of the Wild is absolutely top for me. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, San Andreas. Like Vice City is a... GTA Vice City is definitely one of my favourite GTA games, but actually, architecturally and sort of landscape-wise, like that was a pretty boring map and there wasn't a lot of big landmarks to, like, find your way around. It wasn't particularly memorable, whereas you know, like San Andreas, I absolutely loved every inch of that map, and that was a huge sporting map with huge, you know, countryside bits and city bits. But yeah, San Andreas is, I mean Zelda definitely in recent years, but
original Crackdown was good. Mainly because I've said it before, but because although it wasn't the best looking game, it meant that they could design a ridiculously different amount of buildings. You know what I mean? Like the buildings were all felt unique from one another, especially in the last area, the sort of Neo Tokyo area. These huge skyscrapers that didn't look similar, and that was really important because it gave such a good look to the place. You know?
I've still got a soft spot for GTA 4. It's probably aged a lot worse than I realise. But like, I could go for walks in that game. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, just turn the sound way up so that all, like, you properly get all the detail that they've put in it and just go for a stroll. Like, it's unbelievable.
Of course, by default, the best map in a game is the getaway. Do you know what I mean?
Just because it's actual London.
Best city.
Doesn't
it
just have, like, brick walls where they just couldn't be bothered making any more of London?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And my brother,
you know, got to figure out how to end the map somehow. But yeah,
when that came out, my brother was adamant that he was going to learn the knowledge using that game. And I had to turn around and go, "Mate, it's not like properly everywhere in London. It's like proper condensed down." And I'm just going to play it lots and learn every road. that's not how it works, mate. Not how it works.
In terms of small maps, the town bits from the more recent Deus Ex games I really like, because they're tiny, like they're just like a block each, but they're so dense and weirdly believable for it. Big fan of those.
Speaking of maps, right? Sean, are you still playing Yakuza?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
So now James ain't here. Do you want to tell me what you really think?
I'm enjoying it, man.
I know you bottled it last week. You went, oh, no, I'm enjoying it.
I am. That's a real really? Thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you got to the second character?
No, yet? I've. Like I say, this week has mostly been Hollow Knight. I'm cracking on with it. Don't worry.
Fair enough. All right, you can pussy out now. It's fine.
But yeah, Richard then next. Goes on to say, are you excited about next-gen games and the potential gigantic worlds they will have? Now, I don't think that's a certain thing because... As you know, all right, yeah, you get more hardware, but also you get people expecting more graphical fidelity and more detail, and that requires more people and more money. So I don't know if you're necessarily going to get bigger worlds as a result. Like the biggest
biggest... you will. You'll get games that aim for that as their selling
I guess,
point.
Yeah. But like the biggest Elder Scrolls game is the fucking second one, Daggerfall. Like, and no one really remembers that too fondly. Like, so they haven't just got bigger every time. That's not necessarily how
no,
it works.
Yeah, I think that's the way to put it. The size of it doesn't necessarily mean that I'll get excited. It's whether the world's any good or not to be in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the thing that I give a shit about. I mean, the size of it, no bearing, whether it's big, small, whatever. As long as it's fun to look around, that's all I care about.
Yeah.
Cool. Next
tweets.
Question.
If you want to tweet us at Computer Game Pod on Twitter, Adam Way at Slingshot V2 says sweet, salted, 50-50 or toffee covered popcorn.
50-50.
I'm a 50-50 guy, which I know like salted people get really fucking annoyed about.
I'd absolutely love salted. I guess if I'm cinema, I guess I do. I love salted, absolutely, but sometimes I go 50-50 just because it's a bit interesting.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'm salted in the cinema because I don't like the sweet coating that they put on those ones. But proper corn, mate.
Shit,
that is my
man,
business.
Yeah, I mean, that is fucking hell. The cost of them's ridiculous, but yeah, worth it.
Yeah, the what a ridiculous
the cost.
Is it?
Yeah, proper. Like, yeah, it's like isn't it like £3 for a little bag of them usually.
If you're getting them in the cinema, but they're 86p for a
Oh, shit,
like
okay, maybe I've only seen them
and...
in the cinema then. Right, okay.
Yeah. In Tesco's, they do like the smaller bags for 86p or whatever. And oh my God, the sweet and salted version of that is insane to the point where you're licking your finger and run it along the bottom of the bag, picking out the last salt granules and the sweet chunks.
Better for you than crisps as well?
Sorry?
Aren't they way better
for you than
crisps?
They're only 88 calories, says the pack.
Yeah, well, 88 for the salted. I think it's 126 for the sweet. That was a big part of my diet. Like, to popcorn instead of crisps.
That's what I always get. I get a popcorn mix now if I have a meal deal, definitely. Love it.
Mate, you know, you wanted Fentimans to sponsor you. I'd love it if proper corn. So, you know, send them. They are on Twitter. Send them a little tweet saying, I heard how great your popcorn was on the computer game show. You should £40 an episode.
I'll be up for that.
Yeah. Let's go back to that.
Just do one of the transformation things. Like if we have like on left side, we have you saying we have the signed picture that I've got, and then now you today, and it's a thanks to Popcorn. Look at me, sponsorship just like that.
Just sponsor me.
The Popcorn story.
Yeah. And then we could say and wash your Popcorn down with a lovely bottle of Curiosity Cola.
Yeah.
Right, cool. Curtis at Luke Cage H4H. Is there any of you interested in these bad boys? And he sent us a link to bluecrate.com, selling a self-stirring mug.
I've seen these before, you know.
Yeah, I've seen the videos of those.
£12.
I mean, right. Jesus Christ, that's solving problems that no one has a problem with.
I mean, they do lean into that, like... There's a GIF that shows someone using it, and just underneath it just says, "We all know someone this lazy." So they do know it's bollocks.
Do you remember Gadget Shop? What a shame! What a shame!
But those things are still going. There's like loads of things similar now, isn't it, these days?
I mean, I say that, like I'm, you know, joking about it being for lazy people. If you haven't got the use of one of your arms, pretty
always
useful.
Thinking, isn't you? Always thinking.
No, it's often the way, like things you look at, you're like, oh, fucking hell, who would need that? And it's like, well, actually, it can be really helpful for people with disabilities.
Surely you've got the use of one arm then to stir.
I suppose, yeah, you can just put the
so
cup
if you've got
down
no arms, perfect. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you've got no arms, these are perfect.
All right, what if there isn't a suitable surface to put it down on, Matt?
Yeah? I didn't think about that, Sean. You got me there.
Sean, yeah? I mean, I would agree with you had it not clearly been sold as a gimmick product for wacky people.
No, this is often the way. Like, things that are initially designed for people with disabilities or whatever, they're like, well, that's cool, but no one's going to, like... That in and of itself won't sell enough of them. So things like, you know, like the Slankit.
Oh, yeah.
It's a blanket with sleeves on it. That was originally designed for wheelchair users because pain in the ass getting a jacket on and off if you're in a wheelchair.
Right.
But, yeah, that just got sold. It's like, it's just like a funny thing to wear when you're just
on
the sofa.
Do you like hammering Netflix box sets? Here's a Slankit.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it is a thing. £12. I'm almost tempted, except I don't really drink anything that needs stirring. I don't really do tea or coffee.
I wish we were sponsored by the self-stirring mug.
Get involved. Self-stirring mug, proper corn, Fentimans, perfect combination.
This episode is sponsored by the self-stirring mug.
Right, Kurt Lewin at @angry_Kurt says, which genre do you think is hardest to make a great game for?
Of which genre?
Yeah.
It's got to be racing, right? Driving games.
It seems to be the one that people struggle with the most. Or at least... But then that's not them not making great games. It's just they don't seem to sell for some reason.
Well, I mean, certain ones do. Okay.
He's not asking about sales figures, though. He's like, you know, what makes a great game?
That's what I mean, yeah. I think if we're talking critically, like, there are loads of racing games that critically do really well and then tank.
That's
sales-wise,
true.
You know, we can name at least one.
I think it would be almost impossible to start a new football game franchise now. Do you know what I mean? There was a time where it was like, yeah, you had Pro Evo FIFA, but you also have Red Card Soccer, Actual Soccer, you know, David Beckham, so you know, all that sort of shit.
But then isn't like Pro Evo's basically shit now, right?
It's not shit. It's just the thing is the game actually plays well. I've not played the demo. The demo for the new one come out this week. I've not tried it yet.
Okay.
It's not that the game is shit. It's that all the background stuff around it is so far behind what FIFA's doing that it's kind of like people are just saying, yeah, no, all right, I'm not 100% happy with the gameplay in FIFA, but at the end of the day, it's got so much backing it up. No, from the licenses to the online game modes to the FIFA Ultimate Team. That I mean,
I suppose that's the thing.
I'd rather
isn't
take
it?
The dip in quality over gameplay and get to do all this cool shit rather than play Pro Evo.
Yeah, no, because like, I was going to say, like, do you think there will come a point where like a developer or publisher would be like, do you know what? I think it's worth having a go. But I think
if anything, someone's going to approach Konami and say, we're going to buy Pro Evo. And then just pile money. It's like, this is just a big developer just going to say, look, let's just get this and then really challenge them.
But do you wonder if, like, if there's any merit in that? Like, it feels like, I mean, obviously I don't play it, but it feels like FIFA is so, like, the logical conclusion to what everyone wants from a football game. That, like,
it is and it isn't.
If someone else was really going to come at it, like, would they need to try something completely different?
It's not licenses, though, isn't it? It's more than anything. Like FIFA.
No. Well, in the past, people have overlooked the licenses and been okay with it because Pro Evo was so much better than FIFA at the time. Mm-hmm. Now FIFA is vastly improved over to what it was back then. Mm-hmm. However, it's all the online modes that have really, really fallen behind elsewhere, and if a big-time developer was willing to put in a lot of money to get the online framework together, then Pro Evo has a chance of surviving. And, I mean, it's surviving. They're still releasing new games, so it must be doing well enough. But, goddamn. If someone took the ball by the horns for that game, then I think you'd see more of a challenge than what we're seeing currently. I think people can overlook the licenses to a certain extent, but... Yeah. When there's so much other stuff where that game falls behind, then
it would be amazing if a new football game came out of the woodwork. It would be fantastic, and then start to build up an audience. But it's just such a mountain to climb with that regard.
Chris Kamara's Football Time. That's what I wanted to
call it. Actual Soccer too. Yeah, I guess my answer is going to be like 3D character platformer. which you don't see anymore. But does that mean people think they can't make a great game, or that it, you know, people aren't into that anymore? Because surely, if people feel like they could,
well, it's
make...
hard if you're not Nintendo, because you never seem to be able to do as well.
It's funny, I mean, though, isn't it? Like Mario 64 happened, and then there was a wave of slightly shit imitators because everyone's like, right, we need to get on.
Don't
this
slag off Croc 3D. Whereas... come on, Sean.
Whereas now it's a bit more like, look, Mario exists. I'm not going to beat that. So. Why bother? I mean, you know, Ukulele was all right, wasn't it? And then no. I know people. Oh, was it not? Okay. And there was that. What was it? Hat in Time. Apparently, I think that's.
Yeah, that was going to be pretty good.
I quite like Unbox. That's all right.
What was that one? That yeah. Super Lucky's Tale. That was. That went. Oh, yeah. 2D from virtual reality. But, yeah. But surely, if people thought that they could make a great 3D platformer, then they would. So maybe the fact we're not seeing any. It is a sign that it's actually hard to make a good 3D platform that people actually want to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But I still think football games is top of that.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Right, Andy Godwin at Big Cop Man says, what's all of your favourite opening to a game?
Ooh.
I miss the Bioshocks, innit?
Bioshock Infinite was incredible. Like the opening to that was brilliant.
What a first
say what you want about say what you want about the rest of the games, but the openings have always been absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Mass Effect 3, funnily enough.
Yeah.
If you remember the opening to that game, it was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Proper got the heart pumping. Oh yeah. No! Earth is fucked. We've got to gather everyone and attack these things. And then you spend the next 60 hours sort of just, you know, going on little
shagging
missions
rounds.
That meant yeah. nothing. chatting up your crew. that was really good. I try to think of other really good openings.
I mean, the classics are like Half-Life games. Whether you define that as a great opening, it's certainly a famous one.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. They're definitely up there. Mentioned it before the podcast, sorry, Yakuza Island Express, the opening to that. I suppose what it is about that is the bit where you get to the title screen. The way it does that is very, very cool. Like the way it all comes up and then the title comes up and everything. I love it when games do that. Like, and it works, you know, it nails that. So, yeah, that was a more recent version of a game that I've loved, like right at the beginning.
Yeah. Lost Odyssey. I assume neither of you played that.
No.
Probably don't. It's a very old school RPG, but with amazing story bits. But yeah, the opening to that is like basically a cutscene with the main character kicking the shit out of a load of people. And then the menus just appear and it's like, oh my god, it's the game, it's the fucking game, and it's just just like totally seamless. That was really cool. Braid. The way that starts, you know, it just loads up and there's no, like...
There's no menu or anything, is there?
Yeah, no title screen. And, like, if you stand around for, like, 10 seconds, it's like, press the stick to move.
Yeah, I love games that do that. Way, like, you're sitting looking at... I remember the first main time that happened to me that blew my mind was Bioshock 1, actually, when you're in the water and it just looks like a cutscene. Like the water physics and visuals is so good that you land in the water and then you look around and you don't even look around, you've got your pad down and you're going, right, well, why are we just looking at, oh, I'm in control, holy fuck. Yeah, that was I did that on a demo when the demo came out. I was like, what? I'm actually controlling this bit, that's mad.
I mean, I've got to say the first Resident Evil with like the sort of SMB style intro, and
no,
then you're in the house and
don't go. Yeah.
No, if you're mentioning Resident Evil, surely the opening to Resident Evil 4 is the best of the bunch.
Yeah, fuck.
Yeah, that's also
when you're
that's
walking
also
into
good.
That town for the first time. That's fucking good.
Unbelievable.
I remember just being impressed by the piss, the steam coming off his piss as he's walking out of the car. And I was like, oh my god, there's steam coming off of his piss. This is the future.
It's got physics. Zone of the Enders, the first one. So the game starts and you're a teenager who magically falls into a giant robot and then has to do a fight, but it doesn't tell you what the controls are because you're a kid who's just fallen into a robot and just like, ah, fucking, I don't know. So yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Good stuff.
I think that's it. Yeah.
That's enough examples. Yeah, the rest have dog shit intros.
Metal Gear Solid, every single other game, Solid, unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, totally. Piston Twister, at Piston Twister, says, loving the new, less shouty and less confrontational David Turner's computer game show is now the pod I always wanted. How is the main one himself finding it? Well, thanks for asking me, Piston Twister. It's very nice of you. Yeah, I think it's nice. I think it's been good.
Shut up. I hate it. I hate it. Don't think it's as fun. Don't think it's as good. It's just annoying me. I'm sitting here, I want to get into it, but I can't because people moaning.
But you're making everyone else so happy, Dave. Do you not get anything?
Fuck them. I'm not here to make them happy. I'm here to entertain. yeah, I hate it. Next right, cool. question.
Lame Boy Advance at Lemon_Leroy says, Denton had Life is Strange, but what game of the rest of you wish that the others would just stop bringing up? You probably all have a few.
I think we can all safely say that James needs to shut the fuck up about Juiced, because every week,
it's ridiculous.
Fucking relentless.
It's getting silly now. In the fucking chat, I'm like, oh, I'm really looking forward to Forza Horizon 4. Yeah, well, oh, yeah, but Dave, have you played Juiced yet? Because it's just non-stop. I can't believe how much he loves Juiced. Yeah. So that's my answer.
I mean, I don't know. Like, obviously, I get nothing from the football stuff, but
there's been less of that in recent years, though.
Yeah, no, it's been all
right. Rocket League's taken over from that. And that was James' answer. James was my two favourite games. Rocket League and Titanfall 2. Well, better than Juiced, James. I know you're listening car. It? Grip your steering wheel. It's better than Juiced.
yeah, I have to pull over now. I mean, obviously, the Titanfall 2 chat, like a couple of years ago was insane. But yeah, recently, I don't know. I mean, I can't really think of an example, actually.
All right. We all just get on these days. It's good.
We're just best buds.
We are.
I really don't like it. Go on.
Last one. Darren Gargette at Desmond says, hi, parents. Do you have any names for video game characters that your toddler mispronounces? We're currently at 2 years old, saying Mary, E.G., Yosh, Yellow Hat, and Map Ham.
Yellow Hat. Harry had some great ones. You know, he had Evil Mario, Evil Luigi, you know, for Waluigi and Mario. Or was it Naughty? It might have been Naughty Mario, which I thought was quite funny. But my favourite was he... I'll have to ask him. I've not heard him say it recently. But for ages, he would call Luigi the Ouija. So we just go.
Yeah, he's Mario, translating it. It's
like Mario and the Ouija.
Translating it from French. It's fine. But yeah, Darren says bonus points if you can guess their proper names. So obviously, Mary is Mario. Eiji's Luigi. Yosh is Yoshi. Yellow Hat, I presume, is Wario.
Yeah.
But who the fuck is Map Ham?
Map Ham.
Map Ham. Yeah.
Bowser. No, I don't know why. That's the first
but
thing.
Why
that comes
would it,
to
why
mind.
Would it be Map? Yeah, I don't know.
Map Ham. Who knows?
Maybe
that, I mean,
from
why
sea
would it be
anyone? It's that famous map character.
Map Ham. Sean? Oh, your one don't talk and stuff yet, does it?
No, I mean, it just makes noises all the time.
My mum does talk, but not about games. So,
yeah. So Scott, really Scott life.
I bet
it's
James
cool.
has got some good answers to this. Probably we'll have to ask him next week. Yeah, James, yeah. I know you're listening. Take down notes. You better have been taking down notes. Write down a note for this now and the names and
I cannot wait to hear James' arguments about my Detroit conversation. I was so gutted when I heard he wasn't on this week's show out of the blue.
That's going to be 20 minutes.
I cannot wait. It's a shame.
Are you
offering
a challenge? But... You're genuinely saying bring it on. Yeah,
definitely. I can't wait to hear. I mean, on some of his arguments were ridiculous, but I can't wait to talk about it.
Oh, God, James is going to have a breakdown. What else have you got to say about James' opinion of Detroit, Matt?
Well, he's not.
I wrote those notes. Man. Just the fact that you were literally arguing about the history of games and branching storylines, and also because James had quickly gone through Beyond Two Souls and Fahrenheit, it's little wonder that he hated Detroit. And he's basically also loads of arguments are basically stemming from about because Detroit did something wrong rather than about what Fahrenheit did wrong. Like he was just bonding the whole thing into one argument. Cannot wait for him to come back.
Well, look forward to that next week, ladies and gentlemen. Matt versus James next week on
Detroit. It depends if he's back. Well, one of us will be off, probably.
I mean, take your bets now. I'm going to offer this to Ladbrokes. I've got a feeling James is going to win this one, to be honest with you. But we'll see. We'll see how it pans out next week. It's going to be an interesting one.
But he can argue my opinion's wrong because Evan's entitled to their opinion. So, whereas loads of his are like just because he hates David Cage games and yet he's played every single one.
Are you saying that the only reason James didn't like that game is because he doesn't like David Cage? That's your official stance on this matter.
He's hardly going to go with like a totally clear objective view, is he?
So his views kind of... What you're saying,
his views weakened by the fact that that's what he does. He just hates Cage games. I mean, although actually, he was quite positive in certain aspects, but generally, it's like, oh, it's David Cage.
His opinion still is invalid, is what you're saying.
I'm saying it's been tainted because that's his
Why are you not going along with this? Why can't you see what I'm doing?
I don't need to back me to a corner and then like have to replay that next week.
It's not backing you into a corner. It's winding him up. Let's get him hyped. Let's get him hyped.
Tainted, yeah. I mean, like, what do you expect when you play all the games in a row and then say, oh, but Fahrenheit this? Like, no, we're talking about Detroit here, James.
Oh, God, this is going to be
still
good.
He hasn't played the Nomad Soul, which is the best one. So all of this is moot.
So that's it. If you want to tweet us, the Twitter is @ComputerGamePod. And keep sending in your pictures of your t-shirts. It makes us happy every time we see a new one. It's great. It's all great seeing your beautiful thing. Faces.
And basically, our links to all our social media, everywhere else you can get us pod, are in the show notes. So yeah, to look there if you want to find out where we are online.
Yep. And we'll catch you next week for the Battle of the Century. It's Matt versus James over Detroit.
If James turns up.
Ooh, another little dig there. Are we talking about Detroit in a spoilery way after the music, Matt, or are we not bothering this week?
Well, I guess we should probably wait until James comes back. But okay. I would love to have a conversation about it, for sure, but let's wait for James to
next
come
week
back.
We'll do some spoilery chat at the end.
Because I've something occasionally 20 years ago.
All right, we'll catch you next week. Thanks for living it. Goodbye.
Cheers.
Goodbye.
Bad.